plaything can you offer me today?
An obscure body in the SK system, Your Majesty. The inhabitants refer to it as the planet Earth.
How peaceful it looks.
Most effective, Your Majesty. Will you destroy this Earth?
Later. I like to play with things a while. Before annihilation.
Nations have launched a new $100 billion development bank. Known as the BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, they agreed the aim of the bank will be to fund infrastructure projects in developing countries. It will be based in Shanghai, and as its first president will be Indian, it was left to Prime Minister Narendra Modi to explain its ethos.
It will benefit BRICS nations, but will also support other developing nations, and it will be rooted in our own experiences as developing countries.
The bank is the group's first concrete step towards reshaping the Western-dominated international financial system. BRICS nations have long criticized the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund for not giving developing nations enough voting rights.
I think the biggest common problems, a problem for the BRIC nations, is how to deal with the United States and more specifically the U.S. dollar. All these BRIC countries are accumulating enormous dollar reserves. The dollar is going to lose a lot of value, and so that means these BRIC nations are going to lose a lot in the real value of those reserves. A lot of these BRIC nations are running trade surpluses with the United States, but of course the United States is not in a position to actually pay for these products, so they're participating in vendor financing. And these are real problems, and the world needs to wean itself off of this vendor financing scheme and needs to find a way to get out from under the dollar as the reserve currency.
And now they're expected to sign an agreement allowing them to extend credit to each other in their own local currency. Do you see this as a step toward replacing the dollar?
It's a step. I mean, it's certainly a movement towards that direction. And the more other nations begin to invoice each other in their own currencies and trade bilaterally in their own currencies and not try to do everything through the U.S. dollar, the less dependent they become on the dollar and the more vulnerable the U.S. economy becomes to the day that the dollar is no longer accepted around the world as the predominant reserve currency.
Now, another announcement that they are expected to make tomorrow is this plan for the countries to form a joint development bank. Do you think that this could rival the World Bank, and if so, how?
Well, I don't think that the World Bank is a particularly useful institution, so I don't think that this is a good sign to see countries trying to follow what is a very bad example and to try to create more structures from government. I think what the BRIC nations need to understand and what all nations need to understand is the less government involvement in their economies, the better. What they want to do is get out of the way. They want to make government as small as possible, have as few regulations, as low a taxes, so that businesses can thrive, so that production can increase and living standards can rise, particularly, you know, for the middle and lower classes. And, you know, the best way to achieve that is not through government-created institutions, but through the private sector.
Just announcing and putting the money in by itself won't get it up and running. You're going to have to get staff and headquarters and loan procedures. So all that, it could actually take years, but it's a significant step in the direction of moving away from the Bretton Woods institution. So it might not be that different, but the fact that it's controlled by the BRICS, based in China, mostly capitalized by China, gives China more power in choosing which infrastructure projects get funded, which do not. China might favor water infrastructure, for example, relative to other things the World Bank might be doing. But this, and also the contingent reserve arrangement, that's the other big initiative of the BRICS, which is sort of an alternative to the IMF. So what's going on here is really the BRICS are saying, look, what we really want is more votes and more voice inside the IMF and the World Bank. If we're not getting it, we will build our own parallel institutions, and that's what they're doing.
Congressman Paul, to you, is there a connection between undeclared wars and the Federal Reserve?
Probably, but we don't have proof of this. I think it's the neglect of the Constitution which allows that. I mean, we have a Federal Reserve which is not constitutionally authorized. We go to war and they're not constitutionally authorized. The Fed can literally loan money and grant money to foreign governments and foreign central banks, so we don't know exactly what they're doing. That's why they fought so hard to prevent an audit of the Federal Reserve. But I think our monetary policy and our foreign policy are intertwined. The other thing is even if it's all above board and people vote for war and vote for the spending and there's not enough money there without pushing up interest rates, the Fed monetizes that debt. So the Fed is there to accommodate the big government conservatives who love war, warmongering, preventive war without declaration, and the people who love domestic welfare spending. Yes, the deficits are accommodated by the Fed as well. So they are interconnected.
Lou, the Congress did not declare war on Afghanistan. The Congress did not declare war on Iraq. The Congress gave President Bush and his successors open-ended carte blanche to kill anybody they want, war without end. How did this happen?
Well, Judge, we have what in effect is a dictatorship. At least in foreign policy, the president is able to make war on his own, as you say, execute people. He can kill Americans on his own if he thinks they're bad guys. No due process, no judge involved, no jury. And it's absolutely, as Dr. Paul says, connected to the Fed. If there were no Federal Reserve, there could be no American empire. There could not be all these wars because they don't have to worry about taxing people for them. They just print up the money. So if they did not have the ability to print the money, we wouldn't have wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. We wouldn't be in 170 different countries.
The bottom is either going to drop out of the market or the dollar. And I'm betting actually that it's the latter. But the problem is if the Federal Reserve is prepared to sacrifice the dollar in order to save the market, real returns on U.S. assets are going to suffer dramatically as a result.
Well, I'm starting to wonder if the tune really is changing. Because ordinarily, I would say that a majority of our guests on set would be saying, guess what, you got to continue to buy this stock market. While the Federal Reserve continues to be involved, the bond buying program has been placed, interest rates are near zero, can't fight this one. But all of a sudden, I feel like we have a lot of guests this morning who are saying this bubble's got to pop, stock market's got to turn around and go lower. It's starting to sound like the consensus is that we're topping out. Would you agree?
Well, in real terms, if you want to adjust the Dow for the price of gold, I think that it's going to continue to fall in gold terms, regardless what it does in dollar terms. Look, I listened to your interview with Harry Dent, who's made a lot of big calls. Normally, he times the market poorly, but Harry would actually be right if the Federal Reserve did the right thing, if Janet Yellen raised interest rates aggressively, sold government bonds, fought inflation, defended the dollar, the market would crash and we'd be in a huge recession. I do not think she's going to do that. I think Janet Yellen is going to ignore the dollar. She's going to ignore accelerating inflation. She's going to keep printing money because she believes that's what grows economies and creates jobs.
Well, it sounds like you're saying that she's in a lose-lose scenario, Peter. What should the Fed do right now?
The Fed should reverse its policy. Its policy has been a mistake. It has inflated a bubble, and it has prevented legitimate economic growth from taking place.
Well, you're not telling me what they should do.
We have serious structural problems.
Well, all right.
But look, the economy has serious structural problems that are the result of bad monetary policy in the past. we shouldn't continue to cover them up with more bad monetary policy.
All right.
So we needed to have a more severe recession in 2008, 2009. Unfortunately, we didn't get it. The Fed cut it short by stimulating another bubble.
Right.
But we have bigger problems that have not been addressed.
All right, Peter.
Or we could go to the bank, close our accounts, and cut them off at the source.
You're a genius.
Oh, man, but then we won't be bank buddies.
Now there's two reasons.
Hello.
Hi.
We'd like to close our accounts.
Close your accounts? Is there some kind of problem?
No, we just like to close them.
Okay. Ms. Lambert handles all our closures. Would you come over here, please?
Hi, I'm Karen.
I want to quit the bank!
We're out today in opposition to secrecy. In opposition to the veil of secrecy that closes the money changing that takes place in the temple of the Federal Reserve. While the money changes hands, the moneyed class gets richer and the middle class gets shortchanged. It is more than time to part the curtain that hides the trillions of dollars that change hands. There is a revolving door from Wall Street to the Treasury, to the Fed, and back again. We have former secretaries of Treasury who go from government to Wall Street pocketing hundreds of millions of dollars. I've called repeatedly for transparency at the Federal Reserve so Americans can see what is being done with their money supply. Every time I call for transparency, people from both sides have said transparency would undermine Fed independence. Problem is, Congress created the Fed, and Congress was intended to have oversight over the Fed, and as time has gone on, we've lost that oversight, so independence has really led to abuse. Some say, well, the Fed is already audited each year. The Investigator General, who is responsible for auditing the Fed, came to Congress in 2009, and here's what she had to say during question and answer in a House committee. A congressman asked, what have you done to investigate the off-balance sheet transactions conducted by the Federal Reserve, which according to Bloomberg now total $9 trillion in 8 months? She fumbled, she repeated herself, she looked silly, and then she said, you know, I think it may be important at this point to yada, yada, yada. Then several yadas later, this bombshell. We do not have the jurisdiction. This is the auditor. We do not have the jurisdiction to directly go out and audit the Reserve Bank. So really, there is no audit to the Federal Reserve. So don't let anybody tell you that we already have an audit. No meaningful audit of the Fed exists. And when the primary auditor and overseer of the Fed was asked about $9 trillion, the inspector had no clue what had been purchased with the money. Is there a chance that the Fed only has our best interests at heart? Sure. But when trillions of dollars change hands, wouldn't you want to know who got the money and did anyone enrich themselves in the process? $9 trillion is over half our entire national debt. This is money that ultimately becomes debt for all of us. It's being doled out in secret by our central bank. This is, in a sense, laundering money from the American people to bail out big banks and Wall Street. This month, we learned that the Fed's official balance sheet has reached an astounding $4 trillion. To put that in perspective, the balance sheet of the Fed is now larger than the fourth largest economy in the world, Germany. Transparency at the Fed would not hurt the Fed, but a complete lack of transparency continues to hurt and cheat the rest of us. At the very least, the American middle class deserves to know what goes on behind the curtain, what decisions are made, and how they benefit Wall Street and the moneyed class. Being secret and reckless with trillions of dollars is only the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the problems associated with the Fed. The history of the Federal Reserve has also been the history of the devaluation of the dollar. There was a time when the dollar was as good as gold. When the people grew restless or concerned that the government was debasing the currency, the people would simply express their displeasure by exchanging their paper for gold. Convertibility was a check and a balance against kings and queens and any form of government that chose to spend money that they did not have. When the government borrowed from the currency by diluting its value, the people had recourse to protect themselves. Now the great American dollar that was once backed by gold is backed by promises. For many decades, the dollar was said to be backed by the full faith and credit of the federal government. Trust lingered from the historical evolution from barter to a medium that people valued, such as gold or silver. The trust that still exists today lingers from the thousand-year history when currency had inherent value. And when paper substitutes were used, they could always be exchanged for something of real value. After World War II, we instituted a partial gold standard that allowed foreign countries to exchange their paper for gold, and exchange they did. During the 60s, as the U.S. inflated and borrowed to pay for the war on poverty and the war in Vietnam, foreign countries became skittish and turned in their dollars by the millions. Nearly half of the gold reserves were removed by foreign countries in the space of a few years. President Nixon closed the gold window in 1971, and that was that. The last link to gold was severed. But make no mistake, the trust that remained in the dollar was derived from the historic trust engendered by convertibility of paper to gold. For decades, the full faith and credit promise allowed the Fed to continue to inflate, and still the people remained relatively passive in their acceptance of an unbacked, completely discretionary paper currency. But not without hiccups. Inflation nearly got the better of us in the 1970s, and now debt threatens to do the same. Something profound, though, occurred in the past few years, beginning with the panic of 2008. The Fed began to back the dollar with not just promises, but perhaps really, really bad promises. The result is a gradual loss of the purchasing power. Over the past 100 years, the dollar has lost 96% of its value. A nation can survive this gradual loss, we have, but some would argue that the people hurt most are those that are least able to absorb rising prices, the poor and the elderly on fixed incomes. The other possible outcome is an abrupt loss of confidence in the currency. The panic of 2008 approached mass fear that the system was unsound. Reports that the emperor had no clothes were taken seriously, as even the soundness of money market funds was questioned. Our system of paper currency, now backed by the promises of politicians, a $17 trillion debt, and used car loans and bad home mortgages, is always one panic away from dissolution. When that day comes is uncertain. Can the Fed continue the ledger domain? Can the Fed continue the illusion of wealth that comes with freshly inked money? Time will tell. But I, for one, want to know what the Fed is doing. Are individuals enriching themselves at the expense of the public? Does Fed policy enrich one group of individuals at the expense of another? What assets does the Fed hold? What informs their decision-making process? I, for one, want answers. I, for one, want transparency. President Obama's choice of Janet Yellen as the new head of the Federal Reserve is concerning due to the policies Ms. Yellen has promoted in her history at the Fed. The Federal Reserve's answer to economic crisis has long been simply to print more money, or what they call quantitative easing. It does not take a rocket scientist to figure out that printing money out of thin air is not sound long-term economic policy. But Ms. Yellen has been a major cheerleader for it. The Washington Post's Neil Irwin wrote that Yellen has been not merely an engineer of quantitative easing and forward guidance, but a consistent voice within the central bank to go even further. Quantitative easing is not enough. She wants more. Will she go further? Will the same policies continue unabated? Those of us who think quantitative easing has gotten out of hand are now being asked to confirm a nominee who thinks that the Fed has not done enough along these lines. The vote was overwhelming to confirm Janet Yellen, but I think we will rue the day that we endorsed quantitative easing. I believe the Federal Reserve is structurally flawed. I believe we need to be able to prevent or restrict chairmen today or in the future from aiding and abetting the allies. The Fed, politicians and various experts have insisted that such secrecy was integral to its independence and effectiveness. But the results of complete secrecy have been Fed policies that are questionable at the least. This idea that the Federal Reserve is at the root of some of our economic problems is brand new to many Americans, precisely because we're not allowed to know what this powerful institution does behind closed doors, despite the fact that it has a direct impact on our lives. I can see no reason why the American public should not be allowed to see behind the veil of secrecy at the Fed. I will continue to do what I can to part that veil. I will continue to fight for full and persistent audit of the Fed. Audit the Fed passed the House overwhelmingly, but we've been unable to get a vote in the Senate. I will continue to fight for that vote. Today, although I was delayed by the weather, I am here today to oppose Janet Yellen's nomination for two reasons. I believe that she will continue the gradual destruction of the dollar's value, and because I believe the time is now for a full audit of the Fed.
For 3 years, we've asked Harry Reid for a vote on audit the Fed. It passed the House overwhelmingly. Over 100 Democrats and all of the Republicans voted for auditing the Fed. We're supposed to be in charge of the Fed. We created the Fed, and Congress has abdicated its duty, and a lot of people are getting rich off of Fed activity. We have a huge stock market bubble. A lot of wealthy people get wealthier, but I think a lot of poor people are getting poorer, and I think our economy is struggling. There's an illusion of wealth, so I'm for looking into what's going on.
Here the time bombs begin to click. I'll hit you like a ton of bricks. As the Fed-controlled U.S. government, quote, eases into infinity, our nation is plunged into more and more military conflicts with no genuine American interest. The people are divided between us and them, this side versus that side, emotions trumping rational thought. The corporatist media fires up the propaganda for jingoism, and the people who have lost touch with their inheritance of liberty, which includes rights and responsibilities, eats it up. It is easy to yell sheeple at them, and I must admit it is kind of fun, but it is ineffective. Persuasion is far better than argumentative dissuasion. This is not about money. This is not about fiat schemes. This is about much more than that. It's not about Israel versus Hamas. It's not about Ukraine versus Russia, nor ISIS versus Iraq and Syria, nor, quote, refugees at our southern border, nor any of a number of other military and or economic conflicts. This is about war, which is half of the big government equation of the welfare-warfare state. Of course, welfare being the other, and by welfare is not meant nice and humanitarian and caring for people. It's just code for police state. Either way, this is about war, period. The most effective tool to convince people to give up liberty in the vain hopes of security. A very profitable enterprise if you can finance all sides and control the populations of consumers, taxpayers, voters, serfs. Are you sick of it yet? All Americans should be, because this abhorrent violence and this usurious theft is being done under the cover of our stars and stripes, and we are amongst the victims. Some nations have grown so sick and tired of the Anglo-American welfare warfare intervention that they've built a competing system to the Federal Reserve IMF World Bank scheme. Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, the BRICS, along with bunches of other countries, Mexico, Indonesia, South Korea, who knows who else will join the parade there. They're preparing to challenge the global financial warfare shenanigans. This will be economic war, trade war, currency war, political war, and military conflicts, both hot and cold. And before you jump to the conclusion that BRICS is either a savior or a conqueror, realize they may be just as bad as the current scheme. But BRICS and the people of the West have the same enemy, our appropriated national come global government. The hour is late, but all hope is not lost. America can be free. We can be the bastion of ordered liberty, free markets, limited government, and human flourishing. But only if the people stand together, right the ship, oust the corporatists in both parties, and take out the police state at home and the empire abroad, at the root. Following a century of cartelized banking and endless warfare, it is way past time to end the Fed. End it at home and restore sound money and free markets, and end it abroad and replace it with open trade, not another cartelized state-run scheme with a different center of gravity. Unless we place statesmen with allegiance to the American people and the Constitution in the federal government to dismantle a century of fascism, we will only have the outward semblance of a free republic as we cower in a draconian police state under the umbrella of global government of philosopher kings who serve themselves and the prince of this world. This is about far more than voting. Important as that is, you have to reacquaint yourselves. All of us have to reacquaint ourselves and each other with the inheritance of liberty and virtue which we have received, and bring these timeless principles from the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution into the 21st century. It's messy. It ain't easy. And we're running behind. But running we are. And once the intellectual revolution begins, it can't be stopped. But it will fall flat without a transcendent revival. You have a choice. Work hard now to further liberty by having real conservatives and libertarianish conservatives take over the GOP, or watch the statists in both parties push their corporatist agenda to their benefit and our demise. Now is the last chance to stop those who want to fundamentally transform our republic into an empire abroad and a police state at home. End the destruction of our economy by the Republican-Democrat duopoly and their Keynesian masters at the Federal Reserve by standing with the real conservatives to defeat the lawless hordes of cultural Marxists, statists, collectivists, oligarchs, useful idiots, and their fellow travelers, especially the Democrat socialists. First, you have to crush the rhinos for liberty. You are live on Liberty's Thunder with Rex and Trog, irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, not just another brick in the wall, broadcasting to you from the Imperial City, constructed with bricks and mortar and corruption and lies. Doctor?
And built on a swamp. Don't forget that.
It is built on a swamp.
And I am Trog, your co-host, who has a brick head. This is probably one of the most important conversations on the face of the earth right now. And unfortunately, nobody in America that I know of is having it. Why? Because people don't understand economics, and they don't understand foreign policy. And they sit around and they watch Fox News and CNN and the rest of the whores, and they are told who to hate, who to fear, who we're going to go to war with, and they just roll right into it. I honestly thought that the war on terror in the Bush era and the devastation that brought to the world and to our country would have woke people up. But to the speed and the manipulation of people's minds around Syria, thank God people rose up and said, no, we have no business in Syria. Libya, they didn't mind blowing all to hell, which is now a terrorist jihad, wonderland, as Rand Paul says. Toppling the Ukraine through subversive NGOs and then blaming Russia. And then blaming Russia for a downed aircraft, which is being proved it wasn't them or the rebels. It looks where the direction it's going. But you'll never hear that again in the media, because all they needed was that plane to fall out of the sky to create the Cold War with Putin. And it's real interesting, because being kind of all over the place on the Internet, from international groups to local groups to, my old friends and families from the primary, and watching people talk about the death and destruction of people and cheering it on was kind of shocking, to be honest with you, kind of shocking. Because I am zero pacifist. I mean, you can get my wife on this line, and and have her tell you about my personality. I am not a pacifist. I am not an anti-war guy. I'm kind of a combat, you know, wilderness explorer kind of, you know, balls to the walls kind of personality all the way. I have zero problem, you know, about what would happen if somebody walked on my property to hurt my family. I'm just not a pacifist type personality at all. And I believe in the Bill of Rights, and I believe in the right to defend yourself, and I believe in the right to even kick some ass when you got to without worrying about being arrested for defending innocent people. It's just, you know, I'm very red-blooded, you know, red, white, and blue in that arena. And I'm also very open to the idea that, oh, my God, that person just attacked an American or blew up one of our corporations or, you know, attacked an ally. And, okay, we're going to stomp them into the frickin' ground, and then we're going to come home and say, okay, do it again, and we'll be back, and we'll do the same damn thing to you, but we're not going to fund them after that, or are we going to prop up a dictator and then prop up and arm rebels who are actually terrorists, but we call them rebels, you know, to overtake somebody because one of our allies wants to build a frickin' pipeline through their country. That's just bullshit. And anybody who calls himself a conservative or a Christian or whatever, who believes that that type of foreign policy is okay when we have, what, over 100,000 people, innocent people killed in Syria because somebody wants to build a pipeline through that country, and that somebody happens to be somebody that doesn't have a problem funding terrorism, you know, I'm like going, are you kidding me? You know, are you people, are your brains pickled? Did the NSA and the Patriot Act and NDAA and being felt up at the TSA and sexually abused put you into such a position that any time the government or the five corporate-owned media companies in this country say something that you're just going to roll over and wet on yourself and say, okay, that's great by me, just keep me safe and give me free shit? Is that what this country has become? Because that's what I'm seeing more than not. And cheering the death of women and children, you know, I'm just floored, you know. How many more people, when Albright got on there in that interview and they said she was being interviewed back in the day, and the lady asked her what, you know, we've heard that over 500,000 children have died because of the U.S. sanctions on Iraq. And she goes, yeah, was that worth it? And she goes, well, yeah, we believe it was. And I'm thinking, you know, back in the day, you know, when I was a little bit younger, I got a siren going off, I'm going inside. But back in the day when I was a little bit younger and I didn't have the internet, I kind of like only had mainstream media to give me information, and so I'd listen to talk radio and go, oh, okay, that makes sense, he's a bad guy, and it's all about national you know, security and U.S. interests, whatever the hell that means. I think that just depends on who knows what the hell U.S. interest means anymore, you know. And I was just as stupid as anybody else, or naive, but I'm not afraid to say I was stupid, you know. But then one day I woke up and I went, holy crap, my country's falling apart. What the hell are we doing? What is this? I remember the Patriot Act. I was like, isn't that kind of like burning the Bill of Rights on the steps of a Capitol building? Is anybody going to discuss this? Are we just going to give up 250 years of our history and the freedom of this country without a question? Oh, but it's a Republican, and he's a Christian, and he's a red-blooded American, and we're kicking ass and taking names, and we're taking it to the terrorists. Well, hell, now we fund them. You know, I guess you have to ask yourself, Rex, I mean, honestly, and people that are listening, you have to ask yourself sometime, why was there a Bill of Rights and why was there a Constitution and why did our federal government, our founding fathers, put this country together the way they did? Simple answer, they knew man was corrupt. They knew man had evil tendencies. They knew man had a totalitarian tendencies. They knew that people wanted to rule over other people. They also knew that people would use military and force, you know, to submit, to push their will on other people and hold people down under the boot of totalitarianism. We had queens and kings all over the world where they could just look at you and go, kill him. What the hell? He pissed me off. Kill him. and nobody could say a damn thing or do a damn thing. America was great because a group of people got together and said, no more totalitarianism, and we're going to create checks and balances because man is imperfect. And everybody knows that statement, you know, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Well, you're living 16 years almost of absolute power. How do you like it? Are you ready to go to war against Russia and China? I mean, Putin's evil. Yeah, let's go get him. You bet. You know, I'm like going, are you people freaking, have you forgotten everything that we just went through and the condition this country's in? First of all, let me explain something to you. There's a lot of bad people in the world. There's a lot of bad people in this country. I don't just walk down the street. It's not the America I grew up in. I don't just walk down the street, la-di-da-di-da-di-da, and not pay attention because I'm concerned there's some freaking freaks out there. You know, and when I get in crowded situations or I get in a major city or a metro area because I live outside of Seattle, the pit of hell, you know, that California gave us because they all moved up here and liberalized it, you know. And when I get downtown, I have a whole different mindset. You know, I almost go into combat mode because I know there's a bunch of freaks out there, you know. And there's bad people everywhere. But if you elect them and then tell them to do what the hell they want, whenever they want, and just tax you some more just to keep you safe, then you have given up your right as a citizen. You are now a subject of a king or queen, which is exactly what our founding fathers built against when they built this country. So here we are. You know, this whole BRICS conversation, it ain't happening in America. You know, I have to spend my time on international sites to even get a conversation about it or on my group or on the show because it's huge. And it isn't huge because it's a trillion-dollar bank. It's huge because it's one of the biggest, most strategic left turns or right turns. I want to be careful about analogies of left and right. But, you know, turns away from the Bretton Woods U.S.-controlled empire around the world and U.S.-controlled economic, you know, U.S. trade dollar, U.S. petrodollar. This is just the tip of the iceberg. I've spent, I don't know, over 2 years studying this, you know, and I just keep accelerating it because as it comes closer and closer and the bank was launched. I mean, these countries are so sick of being, you know, the bully empire. Sorry to say it, folks. If you can't handle it, I don't know what to tell you. They're tired. There's a South American country right now that was looking for, you know, U.S. help, you know, to develop the country. And they're like going, well, we don't want those freaking Monsanto, you know, GMO seeds in our country. And then the U.S. goes, well, you're going to take them or we're cutting your money off. That's called bullying. If you want to lend somebody, a country, money, and you say, I'm the good guy, and I want to help your country, and then I want future trade with your country, then you lend them the damn money and you cut a deal and you leave them the hell alone. You don't tell them that they got to have gay marriage and they got to legalize pot and you got to have open borders and let all the illegals from the next country into your country, because that's what happens. That's the power of being the sole source economic dollar currency in the world. That's changed. It changed, I don't know, 20 years ago. In the late 90s, we hit our peak in the world as far as the world U.S. currency, and then it started going down. Well, the euro is a big chunk. And then you got the whole China development. Now, China's not an open market yet, but when they become one, it's going to be huge. And so what's going to happen is these countries have got up and said, you know, and I remember an interview with a South American president, and he said, you know what's amazing? China's been down here doing business for a long time. And when they put $10 billion on the table and say, hey, we want to help you build infrastructure, we want to help you build, you know, high-speed rails, whatever the case may be, or we want to help develop your agricultural system and we want to trade with you. He said the difference from the old system, which would be the European, the Western, you know, the U.S., the European system, is that when China does business, they do business. And they just go, here's the deal, here's the money, here's the interest, and let's go to work. And he said, when you deal with Europe or the U.S., they come in and they say, okay, you got to change this, you got to change that, you got to change this social program, and you got to change your laws, and you got to change. They want to control everybody. They want to make everybody like, I don't know if they want to make everybody like us, because after 70 years, I don't think they've done shit to make the world a better place. You know, I just think they want to control. They're controlled. Do you feel like the federal government is a control freak apparatus? Well, you ought to spend some time on foreign sites and learn how the rest of the world looks at us, because they've been feeling it without our freedoms that we have to protect ourselves from the federal government. They've been feeling it hard, straight on. And they have a whole different view, or a more intense view, of the U.S. government and its policies than we do, even though we're not happy with them as citizens. So, you know, if you do the research, it's out there. So here it comes. And it ain't just a ton of bricks. This is will be a multi-trillion dollar shift in the world global economy. And it's going to be huge. Question is, are the neocons going to take us to war because they don't know how to cope with it or to adjust or to fix our internal economic problems? We created China. You did as a consumer. You wanted cheap shit. The U.S. companies and the government allowed them to go over to China and develop China. And we created this huge machine that is going to pass our economy sooner than most people thought, because we don't have real accurate information on all of their economics. And you also have, there's other factors, buying power and things like that, you know, personal buying power, which Americans don't have any. We're, you know, 180% debt to income in this country. Over there, they put over 30% of their income in savings. Funny. And then they buy gold and they buy property. So it's a little different economy. But we also created BRICS. Now, what's interesting is if you listen to the U.S. side of things, whether especially the Republicans, they're just mad. They're mad at everybody. They want to go to war with Putin. They want to encircle China with nuclear weapons. You know, they want to run the nukes right up to the border of Russia. They're all pissed off, and everybody thinks it's about Ukraine. It ain't. It's because Russia and China are the two big powerhouses that can actually compete against the U.S.-EU crumbling EU system. And they have the vision and the power. You know, and this new guy, Z, I call him the Energizer Bunny. I don't think he runs China. You know what he is? They hired him to be the trade expert. Every 3 days, he's in another country cutting another multi-billion-dollar trade deal. Every 3 to 4 days. I mean, it's just in my news feed, I get Z's here, Z's in Argentina, Z's there, Z's in Germany, Z's in the UK. He's everywhere, spending all the money from all the trade imbalance that we have with China, and investing around the world and building trade deals. You can't stop this unless you want to blow them up. And if you listen to the Republicans in the Senate, they want to blow them up. They want to blow Putin up, you know? And half America is going, yeah, let's go. Let's do it again. And it's like, did you just forget the last 12 years of war we've been in? We got our asses kicked. We're crumbling economically. What in the hell is the matter with people? Use your brain. Everything in the world has to do with economics, or pipelines, or oil, or gas. Never has anything to do with human rights or spreading democracy. Show me where we've spread democracy in the last 20, 30 years of our interference in other people's countries. Show it to me. I keep looking. I really, really would like to find one place that's better off since we blew the shit out of it or toppled their government. I really would, because I'm a freaking American. You know, and I don't like the direction we're going. I don't like the direction I hear people speaking, you know, normal people. And I'm going like, please, dear God, get a brain, quit listening to the frickin' media, and start researching and learn what's going on in this world, because the world has changed while we were busy blowing up the Middle East. And it's changed a lot, and it's coming, and it's going to accelerate. Question is, how do we handle it? How are we going to handle it? Are we going to go to war? Do you really want to go to war with Russia? I mean, really? Are you kidding me? Holy crap. I'm a military, you know, weapons research kind of guy. You're freaking insane if you think that's a good idea. And there's some idiots in our country that actually think they can survive a first strike with Russia. I mean, they actually think like that. That means, you know, billions of people will die, but they'll survive. And you got people like that running your country, advising your upper echelons of Washington, D.C. You know, you've been busy chasing the American dream and letting these people run wild, which is exactly what our founding fathers said don't do. You are a citizen or you're a subject. And right now it looks like America's got about, I don't know, 250 million subjects. There's a few people awake, but not many. Back to you, Rex.
Yeah. Bricks and bracks. And Trog is thundering with his club. I think that, you tied all the threads in. I think it's a big topic. And for those of you that aren't familiar with it, it can seem overwhelming. But you don't have to know all the details. Just understand something, that there is a kind of a global bank, right? The World Bank, the IMF, the Fed, they got different names and stuff, but they essentially manipulate and control more or less all global finance. And BRICS is setting up their own version of that to compete with it. This hasn't been done before. I mean, you know, financial hegemony on a global scale like this was not around in any other prior period of history. It's a relatively modern invention, and since World War II, our country and our system has been basically used to keep this global system in place, and now these emerging nations are getting ready to compete. And I don't think that in and of itself it's a good thing because, frankly, they're copying the same crappy system that we have. I do like the competition, though. But a couple of things that Chris said, which I think are really worth noting. He mentioned that our founding fathers knew that men tend to corruption. And he quoted Lord Acton, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, which is why we have checks and balances. And this includes electing evil pricks to positions of power or letting them be appointed to positions of power, as well as the good men. The best of them. Thomas Jefferson, for all of his, quote, liberty-loving kind of libertarian tendencies, didn't necessarily employ that philosophy when he was the commander-in-chief. And that's why the system has checks and balances. Keep in mind something. Don't be naive about the fact that, you know, if you treat people good, they'll treat you good. No, that's not how the world works. Evil men will do evil things. We all have the potential to do evil things. But some people give into that and do them on a regular basis. But they're going to lie. They're going to steal. They're going to cheat. They're going to kill. They're going to rape. They're going to dominate. They're going to control. Evil men will do these things. The question you have to ask yourself is, they're going to do these things anyway? Why in the hell would you give them official power? That's what you really have to ask yourself, which is precisely why when I hear anybody, and I don't care if you're left or right, if you're libertarian or socialist or if you're a conservative Republican or if you're a paleocon or if you're a neocon or whatever your flavor might be, if you give power to the office and your guy is in it and you're all excited because he's doing all the things you like and putting it to the screws of the people that don't agree with you, when the tables turn, the power is there for the other guy. Now, what's happening is that for the most part, this power is being used in one direction, and it is to nobody's benefit except theirs. You just think it's to your benefit when it's your guy in power, whether it's a senator, congressman, sheriff, dog catcher, president, I don't care. The issue is that the power has to be checked because nobody, even the best of us, can be trusted with this, you know. And the idea that BRICS, okay, and again, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, those are the major players. But this isn't just about those particular nations. It is pretty much about everybody outside of the Anglo-American umbrella. That's who's really into it. These are just the five big players. If it's a bad system or a good system, it's really not relevant. I mean, if you're like Chris and you want to get into it, get into it. We don't have time for that tonight. But the idea is that it is a competing system. And you have to keep in mind, competition is fantastic. Competition was put in place. It is a naturally occurring phenomenon. It allows for contrast and comparison and choice, and it allows the best, most efficient, most effective, most true things to come about. Now, competition can also lead you down the wrong path if your heart is corrupt. But if we're looking for the true, the good, the beautiful, then competition helps us make that happen in a more efficacious manner. So if competition is good, and this is something most Americans understand, no matter what degree of market economics you prefer or understand, but the fact is that the whole idea of free market economics is that you compete in the marketplace, and whoever can serve the most people with the best quality for the lowest price wins. That's the beauty of it. And it isn't about winning a monopoly. It is about winning and then maintaining your position of victory by continuing to outcompete, because if you stagnate, someone will take you out, provided the conditions are available for multiple access to the market and that it is in fact ordered and the competition is fair. And that does require government. Oh, poo on you, Rex. It's a natural thing, you know, blah, blah. Well, if you're an ANCAP or an anarchist and you're that naive about it and you think that the natural market is going to occur and be protected just because people like that, give me a break. It does not work that way. You have to have rule of law, and you have to have security in your private property if you want a free market. Those are just predicates of a free market. They have to be there, and that's what government does. That's other than guaranteeing your rights, not giving you your rights, just protecting them, that's what it does. It protects the market so that the market has competition. So if we know and we intrinsically understand, and most people get it, that competition in the marketplace is a good thing. And this is true for leftists. They're always talking about, oh, you got to bust up the corporations, the trusts, and no monopolies, and, you know, Occupy Wall Street and all that kind of stuff. And also for the Tea Party people who actually mostly, you know, either work in or run businesses, so they know the competition. The fact is people understand that. Well, if competition is a good thing in the free market, isn't it also a good thing in electoral politics? And I'm talking about real competition, not one war party, not one party with two wings that give you a choice between, let's see what the pantheon has been of douchebags that we have to choose from. Oh, how about the Marxist community organizer with jihadi sympathies, or the severely conservative liberal Democrat from Massachusetts who has a, you know, Republican haircut? Or how about Jihad Jane McMahon, or this unknown douchebag senator from Chicago who wouldn't even be a senator if Seven of Nine's husband wasn't, acting like a whore in sex clubs? You know, that's your choice. Or, John Frankenkerry versus the son of the last president, right? Or the governor from Texas who sounds like Ron Paul, but is secretly Dick Cheney, versus Al Gore, who thinks farts are heating up the planet too much. I mean, this is the insanity that they offer you, and they call it competition, and you fall for it every frickin' time. Okay? Oh, we need a third option. Hey, we got Ross Perot, right? Great. Ralph Nader. Woo. Roseanne Barr. Gary Johnson. Give me a break. If you want real competition, then you have to fix the ballot access rules, the voting rules. You have to get busy long before an election. And most importantly, wake up the other dumbasses who think that showing up at the poll is somehow, you know, exercising your right to liberty, and that if you just push the lever for the right guy, all will be well. And how about competition in global finance? Right now, the entire scheme is controlled by Brussels and Manhattan and London. The entire scheme, and not necessarily even by those cities particularly, it's just where the centers are, but there is probably a small clique of less than 300 global domineering philosopher king dickwads who control the entire global financial market. That is not competition. That is not a recipe for success. Here comes BRICS, a competing system. Unfortunately, and so far to me, it looks like it's just the same kind of system with a slight twist as the one we've got now. But now we got competition, and competition is good. Unless, of course, they decide to have a sit-down and carve out the planet and say, you stay on your side of the fence and we stay on ours. But the fact is that if we can take out take out the Western hegemony of banksters, then we can start having real global finance, sound money, open trade. And by the way, for open trade to occur does not mean no borders for you no borders freaks. No borders means chaos. Okay? Open trade means the borders are open if you're a citizen and you want to leave and if you want to access again. It is not open to every other person unless they are invited. That's a border. But if you want to have open trade, they use the word free trade these days pretty much to mean managed trade. You know, the Chinese are going in here making this deal. Yes, the Chinese government going in here making a deal for their corporations with the corporations of the country that they're going into. No, free trade, true free trade, is not managed like that. It is one company doing business with another company that happen to be in different countries. But you need a medium of exchange to do that, a global financial system for them to be able to trade in the currencies and move goods around. But by the way, to move goods around, you need an ordered system. The seas, the international waters, have to be open. Otherwise, Somali pirates will come in and steal your stuff when you're shipping it to the country you're doing business with. And that includes overland passes. It includes space. And the only way you can keep those tradeways open is if your military is strong enough to fight the bad guys. Like Chris said, there are evil people out there. There are some Muslim jihadis that are always going to want to kill everybody who isn't just like them, other Muslims, Christians, Jews, and Buddhists, and atheists, and everybody else. They're always going to want to do that. And you cannot negotiate with these people. You have only one solution when it comes to that. You kill them. There are going to be rapists, psychopaths, thieves, con men. Evil is around. They're going to exist, and you have to deal with that. So you have to have a strong power to do that. But the problem is that what we've done is we've taken these pricks, and we've given them the power of law enforcement and security. Who do you think they're in it for? You? Your neighbor? Your friend? The guy you want to do business with in the other country? They don't care. That's the problem. That's what's going on here, and the only thing that fixes it is you getting off your ass and getting involved and increasing the numbers so people wake up and realize what this is. I guarantee you less than 0.5% of America has ever heard of BRICS, B-R-I-C-S, because it's not important, because it doesn't matter. Sure it does. And I bet you anything. You go out on the street and ask people about how our money works, you'd be surprised if you meet anybody. Unless you're going to a Campaign for Liberty meeting or a Cato meeting, who knows how it works? Teach, educate, and don't start yelling epithets at them that they're sheeple and, you know, go back to crazy, unprovable things. And when I say crazy, unprovable things, I'm talking about every damn conspiracy that you might have a gut feeling about but that you can't really prove one way or the other, and frankly, it isn't important. I'm talking about 9/11, who was behind it. I'm talking about the Gulf of Tonkin. I'm talking about the Lusitania. I'm talking about the sinking of the USS Maine. I'm talking about the downing of MH17 in Ukraine. You don't know who did it. You know that people are lying about it because they had a definitive story the next friggin' day with no evidence. So you know they're lying. Do you really need to know why and how and what happened? Not so much. What you need to know is that they're going to use it, all of them are going to use it to manipulate the situation to their advantage. And that's what has to be stopped. And that requires virtue. You have to have the courage and try to do good, not just selfish desires about what I want, but try to do something objectively good. And you have to have the balls to do it. And hiding in your churches, and hiding in your conspiracy groups, and hiding in your friggin' political parties is not that. You are amongst your brethren bitching about everybody else and thinking that you're the only ones who know what's going on and that you're the masters of the universe, and if only any people would listen to you and quit being sheeple, everything would be fine. Bullshit. We live here together. We all have different notions. We all have different ideas. We can get along if we agree on the broad principles. But you got to get out of your friggin' comfort zone and stop hiding behind your religion, stop hiding behind your political ideology, and quit trying to take everybody else down, and you know who the guys behind the curtain are. How about just do the right thing and get enough people? Because unless most people go along with the scheme, it doesn't work. The entire system for eons of the con man has been to dupe the mark. Once the mark figures out the con is over. That's your job. That's what you have to do. And if you want to talk about it, 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. Trog and I broadcast, generally speaking, 9 p.m. Eastern on Sundays. And if you're listening in your browser, you will be cut off at 11 p.m. Eastern, and the only way you can hear us is to call in. Anytime you want, the shows are available, blogtalkradio.com/Liberty's Thunder. You just click on the title. It plays right in your browser. I think you have to endure a 30-second commercial, and then you can hear any of our shows all the way back to before the 2012 RNC stolen convention. Get them out there, because Trog and I do this. We pay money to do this. We don't make money to do this. You got an opening clip of 20 minutes, so you could hear about Bricks. You could hear from Rand. You could hear what's going on. You could hear from Peter Schiff, because we don't run any commercials on here. We could probably make some money running commercials, but that's not why we do this. So if you want it to keep working, then you have to tell people about it, because nobody knows that this show exists unless you tell them. We appreciate everybody who's a loyal listener, everybody who's sharing the show, everybody who's retweeting the show, everybody who's inviting people here. If you see it out on Facebook, please share it. If you click on the pick for the show, write in the comment section or all the clips and articles we use for research and play on the show from this week. You can get into Militia of Liberty's Thunder if you want to see the longer versions of the clips, read the articles. And if you see it on Twitter, thanks for retweeting it. Nothing, though, nothing works like a personal invitation. And don't limit yourself to the Internet. You can invite people off the Internet. Just tell them to tune into the show, blogtalkradios.com, /Liberty's Thunder, 9 p.m. on Sundays. And if you're listening in your browser in archives, just keep rolling. Otherwise, like I said, if you're live, and there's a bunch of you live, 11 p.m., in about an hour, the browser will cut you off. You have to listen on the handset, 646-649-1013. If you go below the scrolling graphics on the show, there is a download button. If you right-click on that, you get an MP3. Play it in your MP3-enabled device. Email it to people. Burn a CD. Take it to your Campaign for Liberty meetings, your Tea Party meetings, your Republican Party meetings, your AA meetings, whatever. Get it out there. We are not telling people how to think. What to think. We are not telling them how to vote. We are not promoting anything here except liberty, defense of the Constitution, using your critical thinking skills to discern through the bullshit that's fed to you constantly, and do something for the conservative cause for liberty. Trog?
Hallelujah, brother. Yeah, you know, we're such passive personalities. I don't know why anybody listens to us. Seriously. You know, I'm thinking about how we met and why and how we connected and this journey, which is like, what, 2.5 years now? It's just mind-boggling to me some days. And the biggest thing that I think, no matter what we talk about, because we can pick a topic you want to talk about, like we did last week about, you know, Rick Perry and his attack on Rand's foreign policy and the whole dynamics of the neocons and what their agenda is and blah, blah, blah. And then you go before that, we started to introduce BRICS. I think I've always kind of mentioned it and told people to join the group because it is very complex. I mean, I think I have, 2,500, comments, posts, articles, videos, whatever's on just that topic alone. And that's after I've cleared it out twice. So that means, it's been 4,000 or 5,000, 6,000, items. And the reason I do this is because of my dyslexic brain. I need a place to log stuff. When this group was formed way back when, right up close to the primary is when I launched. I actually had the group for a long time. I did not want a group, wasn't interested in it, didn't want to manage people. I hate the news of the day. It's just a waste of time. It's all controlled conjecture, by the media and the government, and so I really didn't want to get into that. I had already seen what social media was about and how people just basically were free paper, newspaper delivery people for the media. They just ran around posted the same crap that Fox was talking about or CNN or whoever. So when I built the group, what I wanted was a safe environment where people would leave me the hell alone and I could research, and this was actually kind of a humorous thing because I didn't know anything about Ron Paul. I didn't come from the Liberty Movement. And I wanted to know who in the hell he was because he was still in the running. And we actually had the potential for a convention, you know, for a real convention battle because he had a hell of a movement. And I heard all the negative about him. And I wanted to, and I formed a group with, I don't know, a handful of people said, hey, let's, I'm going to build this group so we can research things that if I try to talk about it in other groups, I'm going to get attacked. Oh, yeah, Ron Paul this, Ron Paul that, oh, rah, 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 you know, he's insane. And I didn't want that. I want people to tell me what the hell they felt. I want to do the research for myself. And that's where it started. And man, has it been down a several journeys. And here's an interesting thing about world geopolitics, because I can honestly say I was pretty naive to the world myself. I had opinions, you know, I have, you know, research background. My mom's, you know, a history major, so I had a, you know, fair, I thought I had a fair amount of knowledge. But what got me to understand the real battle that's going on in this world was when I started going, what the hell is going on in Syria? Why are we funding, why are we messing with this guy? Who is this guy? You know, what's going on? What's the, you know, the politics there? Why is the U.S. so anti-Assad? And because I knew that Assad had taken in thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of refugee Christians when the U.S. bombed the shit out of Iraq based on lies. And I'm thinking, well, if he's such a bad guy, why'd he take Christians into his country? You know, and I also knew people from that area. And I started doing research. Well, here's what it led to. It led to the underlying current of everything that the world is about, which usually has nothing to do with what the news talks about or your friends talk about on Facebook or social media and the emotional content, and that is spreading democracy, human rights, the women and the children. That's all bullshit. It's always about gas, oil, pipeline access, and IMF debt. And if people don't know what the IMF is, that is basically the sister company, you know, the other whore in the world, to the Fed in Europe. And basically their goal after the U.S. blows up the country for them is to go in and get them in debt, tie into that debt, and basically, you know, break the country up. And then all the Western corporations can go in and get the energy and the oil and the manufacturing and the shipping and whatever. You know, it's just the same old game. It's imperialism, but it's done under the guise of human rights and democracy. It is the greatest sell job I have ever been faced with in my lifetime. And I remember the day that I went, oh, my God, this is the game everywhere. And here's the other key. If you look at the U.S. foreign policy and you look at the New American Century and Brzezinski and all the rest of these and the neocons, you know, and the Crystal and all those people, and you really study them, they believe, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that we're an empire. They believe we need to be an empire, and they want to control it, and they want to do, and they will do anything and everything there is to make sure that nobody else rises up to the power of what, like, i.e., the USSR used to be. The number one part of this strategy has always been Russia. And they've hated Putin since day one, because when Putin took over, Russia was totally collapsed. Yeltsin was totally drunk, and it was totally corrupt. And the U.S. corporations and the Western Europe corporations were bleeding off their resources and their oil and their gas. And nobody gave a shit. There was a handful of people that were making billions of dollars, and people were dying, literally dying. And I've done a lot of research on this because I'm very interested. You know, I'm very historically minded, and I've studied it. So when Putin took over, they thought he was going to play ball. And they didn't realize that they had a nationalist on their hands who had grown up in the Soviet era. And so they thought they had him figured out. They didn't have him figured out. Putin took back control of all the rape, pillage, and plunder from the Western corporations and banks and the indebtedness, and in less than 15 years, he rebuilt the country, took it to a almost $3 trillion debt company, gross domestic product, excuse me, built the pipelines up, got the oil, got started cutting deals around the world, paid off all the old Soviet debt, and all of a sudden Russia became a major player in the world again. That's all this crap about Putin is about, is that they, in their, especially Brzezinski, in his plan says we can never allow Russia to rise up to a world power status again. That's what it's all about. You think it's about human rights? You're a typical American. You think it's about Ukraine and democracy? They had a democracy. They had a legally elected president. You know, the U.S. basically caused a revolution in a sovereign country. It ain't about Putin. It's all about power, money, pipeline, gas, oil, and debt. That whole thing in Ukraine came because the president of Ukraine said, I'm not sure I want to sign this IMF deal because Ukraine's economy was up the tank, you know, down the toilet hole, because the IMF thing didn't have a lot of money on the table, and they had all these austerity measures. They were going to cut pensions. They had to cut this. They had to raise energy prices. They had to do all this crap. And on the other side, the country that Ukraine does over 65% of their trade with is Russia, because Ukraine and Russia, you know, where in the hell do you think the Russian people started? Kiev, in case you haven't figured that out. And Putin said, well, here's what we'll do. We'll cut gas prices, I'll give you, and we'll do a loan for $15 billion, and that'll help you out. And that's on top of about $20 billion they'd already invested in Ukraine trying to help that corrupt, crooked country, you know, since they broke from the old Soviet bloc. So that's all it's about. It's just a power structure. And what amazes me in this whole concept of BRICS and the battle and the geopolitical war, okay, is really the country that can hurt us and our currency more than any is China. Now, Obama had his little Asia pivot where he was running around, they're moving, you know, moving the Asian Pacific, you know, in AFRICOM, they're kind of moving up on China's shores, you know, in that threatening nature. But really, they're scared to death because China has $1.3 trillion of our bond debt, and they have over $3 trillion of trade deficit, U.S. trade dollars. If they dumped our bond debt tomorrow, our economy would crash. If they dumped $1 trillion of the trade, you know, just sold it cheap on the market, they'd crash our economy and we'd be up the creek. We'd be back in the Stone Age. So the real threat to the U.S. or the neocons, because I don't see them as a threat to the U.S., you know, compete. You know what I mean? It's that simple. Compete. Be America. There's no threat out there. We're the greatest country in the history of the world, and we aren't because we ran around blowing countries up. We were because we were competitive. We made stuff. We had freedom, free enterprise. That's why we're great. So, you know, China's not a threat unless you make them a threat. Russia's not a threat unless you make them a threat. And so these anti, you know, anybody in the world but us is a threat, you know, the neocons and this whole group of people see the rise of Russia and China, and the rest of the world they kind of got under their thumb, so to speak, you know, in debt, held down, third world nations, can't get out of the hole, you know. And all of a sudden, these countries hit a certain point, and they started doing business together, and they got this vision to create this consortium of countries who were kind of outside the U.S. sphere of influence to some degree, and they definitely had an independent mind about foreign policy. They were typically on the opposite side of what countries the U.S. wanted to blow up. They didn't like it. They didn't like Libya being blown up. They didn't like the invasion into Iraq. They didn't like this crap. And so they're typically on the other side of U.S. military foreign policy. And so they said, you know, we have to do something, because anytime the U.S. wants, because, you know, most of the world and the banking is controlled by U.S. systems, anytime they want, they can sanction you or screw you or cut off your exchange capabilities, and, you know, you can topple your economy. So they said, well, how do we protect ourselves from economic warfare? And that's kind of where the whole concept of BRICS came into play. It was a defensive measure, and like what you said, Rex, is important, and I know you read my comment on it I made to you. I go on, I never was under an illusion they were going to create some Austrian economics, gold-backed, you know, world. But at the same time, the fact that they're building the competition and they're saying enough is enough, is a viable. I mean, I'm into competition. Am I into China? No, it's communist China. I've always felt that they were going to be an issue, and we were selling our soul down the drain, you know, because we wanted cheap stuff instead of focusing on America. I've always been, you know, kind of a core American type person, but nobody was stopping it, and Americans wanted to buy the shit. So it was like, oh, okay, I've been here before, back in the 70s with Japan, you know, when they threatened our economy and started outproducing us and importing massive stuff into our country. You know, I'd already experienced that in my life, so I already knew what that would do. Well, China was 50 times bigger, you know, and it was a different era because of technology, and our corporations were fleeing America because our government was taxing them to hell and regulating them to hell. So, you know, but that was always where my concern was at. And so here we are. You know, we're in this quagmire right now. And when you watch the media, it's insanity, Rex. It's insanity. You watch the media, you listen to the stuff coming out of Washington, D.C., you listen to the crap about that flight, you know, the downing of that flight and all the BS about that. And, they came out like within hours they already had their dialogue down. You know, it was Putin's missile, it was Putin's fault, you know, everybody across the Western Hemisphere, because they're all controlled by the same people. They're a bunch of communists and socialists, and they have a world agenda, you know. And I knew it was BS from the start. You know, who shot it down? I don't know for sure, but it'll come out someday. But, you know, but just the way they dealt with it was just disgusting. And the way people sucked into it was worse. That's the part that frustrates me, is not that, you know, people in power are assholes. They are. But what's frustrating is people pissing and moaning every day about the abuse of government, and then turn around and listening to something the government says and go, oh, yeah, yeah, it's their fault, and believe in it. That's what frustrates me. You know, it's just like mind-boggling. I'm going, are we that lost in our ability to use critical thinking and understand that there's more going on behind the scenes? And if every news carrier in the world and every talk show host and every news carrier in Europe says the same thing, there's a good chance there's a big lie going on behind it, because these are the same assholes who have been lying to us for years and lied to us about Iraq and weapons of mass destruction. I mean, that was only a few years ago. Did you forget that? You know, we got to get some clarity. Well, we have to get some clarity here, because if we don't, they won. And I'm not talking about Russia and China. I'm talking about the evil people that people complain about every day in this country.
Enemy within.
They won. Yeah, they won. If you will listen to their crap, complain about them one day, and then believe them the next day because it triggers some kind of passion in you. You know, you've got to back up and say, you know, I'm an individual human being, and I can think, and I can research, and maybe my gut says one thing and my emotions say another, and I need to do some research before I start buying into the bullshit. You know?
Research, novel idea. Novel idea, research. All right, it's quarter past 10. We got 45 minutes till the top of the hour, at which time your browser will cut you off and you won't be able to listen to the rest of the feed. We'll try to get out of here by 11:30. We got a 20-minute closing clip that has little Ron Paul and the rest of Rand Paul's Temple of the Money Changer speech, which you heard in the opening. That's always good to catch. If you want to listen to Liberty's Thunder After Dark, you have to call in, listen on your handset, 646-649-1013. If you're listening on the Internet in archive or in podcast, just keep rolling. And, again, we appreciate everybody getting the show out there. And, Chris, those points were spot on. We're going to get into a little clip right now that has a little more information about BRICS, global finance, and a little bit of Rand Paul, because apparently people are very disappointed in Rand Paul for, I don't know, sounding hawkish or maybe buying some of the establishment bullshit regarding recent foreign policy events. Let's get a few things straight. Rand Paul can't win no matter what Rand Paul does. I'm not talking about winning an election. He's already senator, and he's probably going to run for president. I'm talking about the fact that he can't not get flack from one or all sides of the political spectrum no matter what he says. Liberals think that he is trying to create a corporatist nightmare because he's going to leave the corporations completely unregulated and they'll take over America. And conservatives think, oh, well, you know, he's just too much of a libertarian. He's weak on foreign policy, and he doesn't want to check people's IDs when they vote. And libertarians think that he's a subversive statist shill designed to be the Pied Piper for the libertarian, highly intelligent, no more than the rest of us, ANCAP anarchist fringe. Right? Give me a break. Now, Rand Paul is playing an inside game behind enemy lines within his own party and the media and apparently most of you who say you support him. Now, I'm not going to sit here and shill for Rand Paul. He happens to be the one guy who's saying things that you go, well, actually, that sounds like an intelligent, well-thought-out position, and he seems to be fairly consistent on the issues, and he's been fighting a good fight as the junior senator from Kentucky for a couple of years. That's a pretty impressive record. But we want to pick on him for every little piece of things he does, or Ted Cruz, for example. Oh, Ted Cruz sounds way too hawkish for me. Well, have you heard Ted Cruz on the constitutional issues? Have you heard him make the arguments? I mean, you love Trey Gowdy in the House, right? Ted Cruz is just as adept a lawyer and good at arguing the constitutional perspective in the Senate. But Mike Lee? Oh, well, you know, he's the smartest of them all, the most even-keeled. Yeah, but he has the charisma of a houseplant. It's not likely that he's going to be in a popular office. I really hope that he comes back as senator. Maybe he can be on the committees, but you rest assured the Mitt Romney Karl Rove machine is already working its ass off in Utah to make sure he doesn't get reelected, and he's not up for election for a couple of years. That's how much they hate him. You got to get a few things straight, okay? You're supposed to measure policy, candidates, and your own actions against something. Otherwise, it's just arbitrary, pissing away, running around like a chicken without a head, screaming parroted slogans. And I don't care if you're parroting Murray Rothbard or William F. Buckley or Ronald Reagan or Cesar Chavez. You're just parroting. That's what you're doing. So you got to think, how do you measure it? How do you measure your actions? You just turn on the Fox Noise or the MSLSD or go to the Huffington Post or Newsmax to try to figure out what you're supposed to think? Or how about you have an objective measure? Number one, when it comes to politics in this country, that measure is the Constitution for these United States. When was the last time you read that? When was the last time you read the Federalist and Anti-Federalist papers to understand what it meant? Because it was written in plain language for merchants and farmers in 1780s, using the English language of that time. Don't impute the meaning of the post-deconstructionist words to the period back then. You read the word general welfare and you think we're talking about welfare programs for the poor. That's not what general welfare meant. You think of the Commerce Clause. Well, it just means that government can regulate everything in the market. You don't even know what the word regulate means. It meant to make regular. It didn't mean to have unelected lifers and technocrats given power by Congress that Congress doesn't have the power to give, making up all sorts of rules and regs arbitrarily for whoever managed to get their ears peaked or their political ideology. You got to know the Constitution. You also have to know what liberty is. Way overused word. Just like libertarian, conservative, liberal. But liberty is the freedom to do that which you ought to do. Oh, libertarian's just buzzword right there. I said ought, sounds like an obligation. Now you're freaking out. Liberals are freaking out because now they think that this is just some kind of Christian right-wing fascist who's trying to just tell the... No. But what you ought to do is something you have to figure out. How are you supposed to live your life? Where is your life supposed to go? But remember something. Rights, and I'm talking about natural rights here, not contractual or artificial rights. Natural rights come from something outside of us. Most of us in this country still believe that that happens to be God. Some don't. Besides the point, the Declaration of Independence does acknowledge our Creator. It is something outside of you that has given you those rights. It's not a man-made government. But rights are never given without a concomitant obligation. That's how rights work. If I have a right to life, you have an obligation to not take my life. Now, of course, if I'm coming at you with a knife and I'm about to gut you or kill your kids and you kill me, you'd be justified. But there's an obligation that goes with the right. It isn't just the freedom to do whatever the heck you want to do, because then you're going to be bouncing on each other's toes. That kind of thinking of I have the freedom to do whatever I want to do is precisely where these neocon pricks come from. And if you have the same ideology, you're no different than them. You just have a slightly different angle. And it's not really liberty. These neocon pricks think they have the moral imperative and that they are right in imposing their will upon you and the rest of the world through wars, and those are wars against actual geopolitical entities, wars against actual human beings, wars against, shooting wars, but also wars against invisible things like poverty, the environment, terror, which is not a thing. It is a tactic of war. You can't have a war against a tactic of war. That's the war mentality. And they live on your fear, predominantly because they live in fear. They are so afraid of you. They are so afraid of everybody else that they have to dominate in order to feel safe. And if your safety comes from dominating others, it cannot be in any way, shape, or form commensurate with liberty, and it cannot be in any way, shape, or form objectively good. And for those of us who are afraid, shake off the fear. Don't live in fear. If you are afraid, you've already lost and you're controlled. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't things to be afraid of, but courage is what it takes. Courage isn't fearlessness. It's not having no fear. It is in doing what needs to be done, in doing the right thing, despite your fear. If you truly want security, you have to have liberty. If you fall for the lie that they've been feeding you, that if you sacrifice liberty, they will let you trade it for security, you have already lost. And that is not American. That is just pretty pale pastel facsimile of an American. And there are some of those who live amongst us, some of them native-born, some of them imported. But the American spirit still animates this land, and it's lying dormant because we've been made comfortable in our success and prosperity. We are made comfortable, and therefore we grow apathetic. And when you're apathetic, then you hold up as virtues material prosperity, meaning more stuff, and equality. Equality is not a virtue. You all have equal dignity before God. You all have equal status before the law. But not a single human being on this planet is equal to another human being in the sense that none of us are the same and all of us have different talents and different destinies and different interests. And that's what liberty is about. And yes, sometimes you'll fail and sometimes you'll succeed. And guess what? More often than not, you will fail. Life is about multiple failures. Because if you're not willing to risk failure, you will never achieve success. That's why competition is important, like we talked about, in global finance, in electoral politics, and in the market. And yeah, sometimes it's tough. Well, tough noogies. Life is tough. Quit whining about it. Get the Cheetos out of your mouth. Get off your friggin' couch. Turn off the friggin' TV. And do something meaningful. Put them up. Do something important. Stop being naive utopians on the right and the left and the libertarian and start doing something real. It's a 10-minute clip. We'll be back on the other side 20 minutes before the top of the hour. And the browser will cut you off, so you have to make sure that you call in. And I think my co-host is back. But nevertheless, here's a little clip, 10 minutes. It's pretty important to listen to. There's a little bit of finance in here, and then we go into Rand Paul on the Fox Noise. I believe it's Greta, where some people have taken issue to it. We'll tear it apart on the other side.
Well, the first thing you need to know is that nobody ever wins a trade war. Currency war is just another kind of trade war. Everybody loses in the end. Some may temporarily come out ahead, but it's temporary and nothing else. So we all, as you pointed out, the cost of living for many people is going up, and it certainly is. My gosh, in Japan, you know, the currency is down 25% in a year. Well, I assure you, the Japanese are feeling that because everything that Japan imports has gone up fairly substantially, and even the things that they don't import are up because the Japanese manufacturers and the Japanese producers can raise prices because they don't have to worry about competing with the foreigners anymore. So we're all losing in currency wars. How long can it go on? Well, it can go on as long as politicians can continue to print money. The problem is, of course, eventually, the market will just say, we're not going to play this game anymore, mm-hmm. and we'll have a serious collapse. You and I can print money all day long, but at some point, you, I, and everybody else is going to say, well, wait a minute, guys, this money's getting worse and worse and more worthless, so why don't we stop? Why don't we stop playing this game? I wish the politicians were smart enough to at some point say, we got to stop this. This is going to be bad. But unfortunately, they never have. Right. And probably will. You know that Mr. Bernanke is certainly not going to stop it because he doesn't want to go down in history as causing the collapse. Mrs. Yeltsin, when she comes in, she's not going to stop it. First of all, she doesn't believe in stopping it. She thinks printing money is good, and she knows, I hope she's smart enough to know that if she stops, oh my gosh, it's going to collapse, so she's not going to stop. Nobody wants to go down as causing the collapse of the world, and so I'm afraid this is going to go on until the market eventually says to them, okay, enough is enough, we have a big collapse, and then they're all thrown out, and we can start over.
We're very concerned about a world war.
Oh, really?
And I don't say that lightly. How they say history repeats itself?
Yeah.
History's repeating itself. The crash of 1929, the Great Depression, currency wars, trade wars, world war. The panic of 08, the Great Depression. There's a depression going on. In this country, depending on whose numbers you're looking at, there's a site to go to, and you know the motto of the Trends Journal, taught to me by my dear father, may his soul rest in peace. He always told me anytime I'd be repeating something that everybody else was saying, he'd say to me in Italian, Papagallo, parrot, stop repeating what everyone else is saying and think for yourself. So what I'm saying is this is the way I see it, and I always encourage people, think for yourself. And what we're looking at, again, there's a website called John Williams Shadow Stats. You look at his numbers, he's looking at unemployment in the United States ranging from anywhere between 16 and 22%. But go beyond the United States. There's a depression in Spain, a depression in Greece, a depression in Portugal, depression in Ireland, depression throughout a lot of Eastern Europe. So the Great Depression, and then it was followed by currency wars. There's a currency war going on. All of this lowering of interest rates, record low interest rates, it's devaluing the currency so the exporters could export more product. Now you hear from Brazil, from Guido Mantega, their finance minister, yelling, there's a currency war going on. China's devaluing. The United States, Europe, they're all debasing their currencies so they could export more. Trade wars. Listen to the presidential reality show. Romney and Obama now are talking trade wars with China, and Obama's bragging about how tough they're getting on them. After that, it's world war. Is there a world war? It's going on now. Go around the world. There's a war in Yemen, a war in Bahrain. There's a war heating up in Kuwait as we speak. Tens of thousands of people are taking to the streets. There's a war in Libya. There's a war in Syria. Oh, now Syria and Turkey are going at it. Whoops, now it's seeped into Lebanon. Go back over to Europe. Millions of people taking to the streets. They've lost everything. People have no jobs. A lot of them have no food or shelter. So we are, as we see it, on the brink of the first great war of the 21st. Generals gathered in their masses, just like witches.
black master head.
Yeah!
Has this event, this horrible murder of 298 people, has that made Putin more powerful in the world, less powerful, emboldened him what?
You know, I think it isolates him from the rest of the world, and the rest of the world needs to speak with one voice, one unified voice. And we've condemned it, and we obviously think it's terrible what has happened. But really, Europe needs to be more involved in this as well. The whole world needs to come forward and say, my goodness, you can't just shoot down commercial airliners. And so, no, I think it's something that I can't imagine what type of rebuke needs to be, but it needs to be as severe as it can be.
Like what, though? President Obama said from the Rose Garden today, you know, that practically, I mean, he condemned it, as he should. But, I mean, what's the penalty?
Well, I think the only penalty that works in a situation like this, unless you're ready to, you know, send troops into Ukraine, which I think most Americans are not, myself included, but I think the key really here is Europe. Europe does a lot of trade, and it's a bilateral thing. Everybody talks about, well, Europe requires and needs this gas. Well, Russia needs the money that comes from selling the gas. Trade's a two-way street, and the Europeans, if they want to, you know, have a realistic or an admonishment that has teeth, they need to talk about trade sanctions on Russia.
You know, there's something really perverse about the fact to shoot down 298 people in a plane, and you probably go unpunished. You shoot someone down on the street, whether it's in Europe or in D.C., in the United States, a single person, all of a sudden you're tried for murder and you're put away for life.
You know, we've had other airliners being shot down, but I think historically, and some of these have been a long time ago, but my memory was that there was a significant and fairly immediate apology for saying we made mistakes, you know, that this wasn't an intentional downing of an airline. I guess it's hard for them to say that, too, because for the separatists, this wasn't a mistake. But you have to wonder how this is going to further the goal of the separatists to have taken down and killed 298 innocent people.
All right, let's go to Israel and Gaza. What are your thoughts about that tonight, how the U.S. is handling it? Are we looking strong and weak like leaders or feckless and just bystanders?
You know, I don't know that when every civil war there has to be something that America is going to do. The one thing I've said is not America's role to criticize our allies for defending themselves. And Israel lives every day, you know, with bombs being rained down on them. And I don't think this was initiated by Israel. It's initiated by Gaza. And it seems to have come out of sort of the anger over first the three Israeli teenagers' death and then the Palestinian teenager death. But it also doesn't serve any purpose from a rational point of view for Hamas. How do they think they're going to win? All it does is then sort of justify sort of the civil war that incurred.
Well, they're keeping going. Hezbollah is backing them up. It doesn't seem like there's any end in sight. So how does this end? Do we have to rely on Secretary Kerry getting a ceasefire while he's in Cairo tonight? Or?
Well, I think we should try to be part of facilitating a ceasefire if we can. The other way it ends is Hamas runs out of rockets. And there have been some who have said that they have 2 or 3 weeks' supply. And they say one of the perverse things of having so many jihadists in the Middle East is that there's competition for money, and Hamas is out of money and will shortly be out of missiles. This is also why Hamas joined the unity government. There were news reports saying they joined because they want our money. And that's what I've been trying to stop. I've got legislation that says no money should go to terrorists and specifically no money to Hamas.
I know you can talk forever about this next question, but, you know, the relatively abridged version, which is the Christian just war theory. Is this something that you believe in pretty wholeheartedly here? And explain kind of your thinking on that.
You know, Augustine talked about it. Other famous philosophers have talked about, you know, a just war theory. And some of it means that war is typically in self-defense. I think that it is important that when we talk about war, that I think part of Republicans' problems, and frankly, to tell you the truth, some in the evangelical Christian movement, I think have appeared too eager for war. I think, when people come to me and they're lobbying for ratcheting up some sort of bellicose policy towards one country, even if it's a bad country, I tell them, you know, when I read the New Testament and when I read about Jesus, I don't see him being involved. He wasn't really involved in the war of his days. In fact, people rebuked him for not being the king they wanted. They wanted somebody to stand up to the Romans. He stood up in a different sort of way, but he didn't organize coalitions and guerrilla bands and arm them. Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't have, you know, people who do want to defend against evil, bad forces around the world, but I think you need to remember that he was, he was Prince of Peace. You know, we're talking about, blessed are the peacemakers, not blessed are the war makers.
Rand Paul is being a very naughty boy. He should be punished. How dare he possibly have made a mistake? We can't let him get away with that. Forget what Obama's doing. Forget Crying Tan, Johnny Boehner, and Mitch McConnell, and the Federal Reserve, and then the Frank and Kerry bumbling all over the planet, and the broke bungler of Benghazi who gave the Russians a reset button that said overcharge. Let's go after Rand Paul, because he might be wrong on this one issue. Let's slaughter the guy, because he can't possibly be doing anything good for us. That's the kind of attitude that you're seeing out there. And be clear about something, all right? I like Rand. I think Rand's a pretty good guy, and I think that he's got a good shot at being president. I don't know why on earth anybody would want that friggin' job, but God bless him if he does. But when they attack Rand Paul, when they attack even Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, Trey Gowdy, Justin Amash, whose primary, by the way, is August 5th, and the Republicans are trying to take him out, they're attacking you, Mr. and Mrs. America. They're going after you. They're not going after Rand Paul. They're going after you. They're telling you that your notion of liberty, your desire for sound money, your desire for ordered free markets, your desire for peace through strength and the defense of America and American interests is wrong. That's why they're going after him. And if you're going to join the bandwagon to go after Rand Paul because of those things, then you aren't who you say that you are. And you need to really think deeply about what you believe and what you stand for. Now, we'll get into that in a minute, but in the beginning of that clip you heard from Rogers and Salente, and they talked about how economic manipulation and currency wars historically in the recent modern times tie into actual shooting wars where people die. Look around the world. People are being killed. People are being killed. Imagine sitting in your house, your kids, your family, your dog, and a police SWAT team shows up because they got the wrong address and shoots your kids and your dog and puts you in handcuffs and tasers you and drags you off. You'd be pretty pissed. You'd feel like your liberty is violated. Imagine the same thing happening with a rocket raining down on your cities. Or imagine artillery fire. Or imagine you're going on vacation and all of a sudden you get shot down out of the sky. This is stuff that is happening. And beyond all the politics of it, the politicizing of it, you have to understand something. People are being murdered. Now, that's never going to stop. It's never stopped. It's been like this since Cain killed Abel. There's always wars and rumors of wars. But you don't have to participate. You don't have to finance, fund, and agitate for these friggin' wars. Now, war is not going away. Don't be sissies. And don't run around with this Fortress America isolationist nonsense either. All right? We are going to be involved in overseas wars whether we like it or not. If you're going to trade with the world, there are going to be bad people out there who need to be dealt with, and violence is the only way that you can deal with them. That's the reality. But you don't have to finance, fund, and instigate these wars. You don't have to be involved in the killing of innocents. Yes, there's collateral damage when conflicts happen. That just sucks, which is why they need to be avoided at all costs. But ultimately and eventually, it'll happen, and you'll have to go in, and innocent people will get killed. Your job is to minimize that. But right now, what we're doing, and I don't care if it's blah, blah, or W, or Clinton, or Bush, or any of the other pricks, right now what's going on is that we are funding all sides. We are arming all sides. We are putting ourselves in debt. We're extending ourselves, and we are somehow directly responsible for a lot of the killing that's going on. We shouldn't be. That's where we are. I get accused of, oh, you're an isolationist, you're a liberal, you're a war hawk, depending on where someone's coming from. The fact is that it's not avoidable. Don't be so friggin' naive to think that wars are going to go away because you got naked in the woods and beat a drum and sang Kumbaya with the terrorists. Give me a break. They'll chop your heads off. Okay? You don't negotiate with evil. You kill it. You chop its friggin' head off. But you don't go looking for evil to get into. You cannot defend every innocent life on the planet. But you can sure as shit take care of the problems you have in your own backyard. You have a southern border that's a sieve. People are using children. Yes, there are MS-13 gang members. There's drug dealers. There's probably jihadi terrorists coming across the border. But people are using children as cover for this planned chaos. It's not the kids' fault. There are children in Gaza that are being killed. Children. They don't have any political ideas. They're not even sure that they're Muslim yet. They're not part of Hamas. There are children in Israel who have to, you know, worry about getting a rocket drop on them while they're on their way to school. They're innocent. They're not involved. They're not global neocon Zionists. They get caught up in this stuff because children are a good cover. That's disgusting, and that is not how America operates, and we need to replace every single prick that operates under this model and get rid of them. Okay, and the only way that you can get people to take action and understand, especially people just don't want to connect the financing and the fiat money schemes with the violence and the wars. There is present pain and present pleasure, and there's future pain and future pleasure. And what we have right now is present pleasure with some pain, but there's a shitload more future pain. And unless you can show people how to connect the dots and rationally understand that that future pain is contingent upon the present actions and bring that pain to the present moment, they won't understand the time value of money. They don't understand when Peter Schiff talks about the dollar price of the market versus the gold price of the market. Now, we're not going to get into all that tonight. We're not enough time. We're almost out of time. We've got 13 minutes till the top of the hour. But this information is available. Like you said, shadowstats.com, Peter Schiff, the Austrian School. This information is available. Go to our page, Liberty's Thunder on Facebook, or Chris's group, Liberty's Talk, and do your own research. You don't have to know everything, but you just have to know enough that as they're debasing the money, they are wicking wealth out of our economy, and they're using it to fund violence globally in order to maintain their power. That is the problem. Rand Paul is fighting that. If he's wrong about this Russia issue, is it really something to slaughter him over? And I'm not sure that he is or isn't. We don't have enough information to know. Chris? You with me? No. There you are.
Are you there? Now I'm,
yes,
now I'm here. I heard a beep in my ear. The only thing I can say, this is not the clip I heard that frustrated me. All right, the thing that my position on Rand is pretty positive. And one of the things that I've always respected about Rand is when he doesn't know, like nobody knows what happened to that airline, nobody knows, and it's pretty obvious that, you know, the government and, you know, Obama administration, everything was trying to pin it on the rebels and Putin, that he usually says, I don't have enough information, or we don't know what's going on there and we need to find out. That's what frustrated me. And why does that frustrate me? I'll tell you why. Because if we don't get our foreign policy right and our economics right, Rand is right on economics. And he's right on foreign policy most of the time. And he's extremely careful about stepping out and saying, this is the position I hold when the facts aren't in. And this one, he jumped out in lock stock with everybody else. Now, was that a political maneuver? Was that because he's in the belly of the beast? Was that because, I don't know, because he has bad advisors? Then maybe he ought to hire you and me, because we can articulate how to read through the bullshit, you know, in terms of, oh, okay, somebody says a rebel shot this thing down. Nobody knows. Okay, let's get the facts. Let's wait for the investigation. Oh, it was the rebels. Okay, now we can condemn them. Or it was Kiev, more likely. Okay, now we can go after them. And we can have an honest discussion about it. And there's a way of articulating that. And I personally, in my opinion, having been not around politics as long as you have, he's got bad advisors. He's got advisors that are telling him, okay, here's how you got to talk, and here's the hot buttons, issues, blah, blah, blah. And if you want to, if he wants to win in 2016, remember the Liberty Movement was educated by his father, who was very against the world hegemony and interfering in other people's governments and blowing shit up based on lies. And so they're not stupid. In fact, I think foreign policy-wise, they're probably the sharpest group in the country. And so I would say, if by any chance any of you people are listening that have influence over anything that Rand says and does, listen to this frickin' show and get a clue, because the world is not bought and sold on what goes on in five media-controlled corporations and the federal government and the neocons. The world pretty much knows it's a sack of lies. And so if you want to win, Rand, listen to Tex or Rex and Chris. And that's my input, because I think he's between a rock and a hard place, and most of the time he seems to be able to wiggle through it pretty good without getting too involved or taking a position that Hannity wants him to take, you know, that the world is evil and George Bush and Cheney are wonderful, you know what I mean? And because we've heard that conversation and heard Hannity beat him up. If I was Rand's advisor, I'd say quit going on Hannity, because Hannity is a neocon's rump boy. You know, totally, 100%. He's an apologist. He gave Cheney more respect and more time. He attacked a U.S. senator who spent a lot of time, you know, has a lot of respect across the country. He attacked him not once, but twice and three times on this issue, trying to take him to task because Rand was not, you know, going to take the position that invading Iraq was a good thing. And in fact, if you listen to Cheney, you know, back in the Papa Bush's day, it wasn't a good thing in his opinion either, but something changed. And during the Bush era, they decided they were going to, you know, use 9/11 and the fear of the world, you know, to launch this endless wars around the world and topple seven countries in 5 years, which very few people, I don't think, have ever listened to that general's conversation on that. But, you know, it's all there. And so I've always respected Rand a lot on foreign policy. So if he tripped over himself or somebody told him, okay, you got to take the, you know, the side that everybody's taking on this or whatever, that's bad advisory to me. And so that being said, you know, we'll wait and see as far as I goes, because my attitude is simple. And it goes back to the, you know, the topic of the show, you know, the BRICS concept is the world's changed. While we were blowing up the damn world and running this endless war on terror and subjugating and turning the United States into a police state and spending trillions of dollars that we didn't have, you know, printing and borrowing it, the rest of the world was moving on. And it's really, if you study the economics, global economics, you'll find that whether it be China, Russia, or any of these countries, including India, you know, they were running pretty good statistical numbers in terms of growth per year while we were sucking eggs. And that's another reason that the BRICS nations formed, is they're going like, we need to protect ourselves, because when they look back at the U.S., they saw us print $4.5 trillion over the last 5 years. They saw a deadlocked Congress. They saw a president who expanded government instead of doing the things you're supposed to do when your economy crashes. You know, they saw the bailouts and the TARP and all that shit. And they just were like, we can't trust the U.S. hegemony anymore, and we need to protect ourselves. I don't think anybody hates America. I just think they hate our economic corruption. You know, they're at a point where they're going, because, see, here's something. When you go back to the concept of the Fed and the printing money, there was like, what, $13, $16 trillion that was printed and just shipped out, and nobody ever knew what happened to it? Well, that went out into the world. They monetized the inflation, you know, the monetized debt, and what they did is they shipped the inflation off to the rest of the world. So let's say I'm a $3 trillion or an $8 trillion economy like China or more, and I'm like going, well, the U.S. just printed, you know, number one, they just doubled their own debt. They won't fix their internal problems or their budget. And the Fed just printed all this money and shipped it out all over the world so that inflation affects everybody equally, so the U.S. dollar doesn't crash. That's kind of the concept of monetizing your debt. And they're like going, I'm sorry, but I don't want to play this game anymore. That's one of the other reasons that BRICS formed. So this whole concept of what's going on in geopolitics, economics, energy, all this stuff, and what's going on in hotbed places, whether it be Israel, Syria, Libya, which is a hellhole again, on top of the last again, and what's going on with Ukraine and Russia have nothing to do with what you think it has to do with. You can be rest assured when it comes to foreign policy. If you listen to CNN or Fox or Hannity or even Levin, as much as I love him on internal constitutional conversation, it comes to foreign policy, they are all basically bought and paid for by the neocon agenda. If you look at Fox News, most of the contributors are confessed neocons. Do the research. There's videos. You know, BBC did a great documentary back in the Bush era where these guys all were like, they were giddy with themselves because they'd finally been given power to push their agenda under the Bush administration, and they did a documentary on it. You know, them out of their own mouth. You know, the who they are. And that Ron Paul video is one of the best, where he names names and talks about the philosophy of it and coming from Trotsky and all that stuff. You know, these people have destroyed the world economy. They've destroyed our economy. They've destroyed a bunch of countries. Hundreds of thousands of people, innocent people, have been killed. And they still control most of the dialogue and power structures in foreign policy in Washington, D.C., and in the five U.S. corporations and on all the media. And the question is, are you going to buy this bullshit again, except this time we're going to go to war with a country who can actually blow us to shit? Or are you going to step back and go, wait a second, I heard this shit back in the Iraq lead up to war. Maybe I need to step back and quit listening to these people, or I need to at least question why in the hell they're taking this tack and do some research for myself, because it smells like hell is coming our way. You know, we're not screwing around with some third world nation. Iraq, Afghanistan, give me a break. You know, and we didn't really do real well there. You know, yeah. And they were little small punky third world nations with hardly any military capability at all. We squashed them, and then we dabbled in there until it became a failed war. And you want to go to war with Russia and China? Are you freaking kidding me? You know? Rah, 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 that's patriotic. No, that's freaking stupid. And you better step back and have a Reagan moment and say, you know what? There's bigger things going on here than my emotions. You know, and this, and honestly, this is really all about what Gerard Celente said. Yeah, what he said. This is a
Chris, before you get into Celente, two-minute warning. So just let everybody know we're 2 minutes from 11 p.m. at the top of the hour. If you are listening in your browser live, you will be cut off. The only way you can listen to the rest of the show, it'll be about another maybe 10, 15 minutes of talk and then the closing clip. You got to call in 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. And if you're listening in podcast or Internet Archive, just keep on rolling. Back to you, Chris.
Well, and what Celente said was we are in a currency war right now, and lead up to all hot wars is typically these currency games or these trade wars. And here's what it really boils down to, and it's sad that we're in this place, but we are in this place. We elected these assholes, and then we kept electing them. You know, we didn't return over our Congress. And you have these embedded crazy mother bears, these insane psychopaths, you know, who think that we're supposed to be some kind of world empire. They read a book about Rome, and they forgot to finish it, you know, the part where Rome fell and collapsed and burned and got invaded. But they read the other part, the glory part, the power, you know what I mean, the control, the money that can be made by controlling other countries or, you know, provinces is what they used to call it. So, you know, there's some crazy people in there. And you're supposed to turn these people over and put new people in. Well, unfortunately, midterms, we started talking about this in 2012, that we need to frickin' find some fresh blood. Well, a couple guys got in, and then all the rest of the assholes that helped get us in the last two big wars and destroy our economy went right back in power. And it was very disappointing because that's we the people. And I don't know what to say about that except it pissed me off because I'm thinking, you know, you get the government you deserve. And people say, oh, it's all corrupt and nothing can happen and, you know, it's all control, blah, blah, blah. Well, if you have overwhelming numbers on a vote, if you're like within 1% or 2%, yeah, they can cheat. But if you have a 10-15%, you know, wave across the board, awful hard to fudge those numbers. So that being said, but back to this concept of economics, what's happened is we've had bad politicians and bad economic, you know, like the Fed and the people in our country. Our country figured out how to vote free shit, you know, by handing power to people who'd give them free stuff, which is something that if you go back into, you know, Rome, they talked about. One of the great philosophers said, you know, when people start figuring out how to vote in free shit for themselves, I mean, that's ad lib, but it's not what he said, but, you know, then your country's in trouble. Well, we've been like this for decades. And so we've run this glory run for a long time. And the only reason we've been able to run this kind of deficit and borrow all this money is that the majority of the world uses U.S. currency. Billions and billions and billions of transactions a day occur, and it's micro percentages, but when it all adds up, it's big money. And that's what has allowed the U.S. government and the U.S. people to live like jerks and to be corrupt and to not hold their government accountable and to accept all that free stuff for their vote. And we're at the end of that. It ain't going to happen no more. We're at the end of it. Obama has increased the size of the federal government. The warmongers and the Republican side have managed to maintain the size of the military budget, which is insane considering we're not in any hot wars right now. You know, it's so corrupt that 30% of the military budget is just totally corrupt. You know, we're past the point of no return if people don't demand change. And I'm not sure right now, based on what I've studied over the last 2.5 years, that people are going to demand change, Rex. I think it's going to have to be an external force that basically either collapses our economy or we get stupid and go to war with a country that can actually meet us head on and cause serious problems. I don't know what it's going to take. But if people don't wake up, we're going to find out. So that's my take on that.
Oh, we're going to find out whether they wake up or not. If they wake up, we might be able to fix it. That's really where we are. But like I said earlier in my previous rant, where I may...
Do they
want
to fix it? That's the question.
Well, so they don't feel the pain. See, the thing is that the current hegemonic scheme of the IMF, Fed, World Bank that BRICS is rising up to challenge... we're at the top of that food chain. We are benefiting from plundering the world. Now, once the money comes here to our benefit, then it gets plundered from us to the 0.001% in New York and Washington, D.C. But it eases our comfort. It alleviates our stresses and pains. And we have enough money printed to placate those without jobs and who would otherwise be completely destitute with our programs. But we're running low on resources. Now, we got an oil and energy boom coming, which will be plenty of money to ramp up the socialism and paper over with more money that pain. And until people feel the pain, they won't do something about it. That's why we have to teach people to think about the consequences of actions, the inevitable consequences. You can delay them, delay them, delay them, but eventually they will happen. And it is immoral to do that to your children and your children's children. And that's what has to be brought home to people to get them to take action. And it's frustrating. I know there's people out there that are working hard and who understand this, and they're just frustrated because it seems like nobody listens. Well, I share your frustration. And we got a caller, and we don't have much time, but I'd like to let him on for a minute. I think he's a caller who shares that frustration. Terry, you are live with Rex and Trog.
Well, that's an amazing thing to be alive, first of all. And I'm not sure I can say that there's anybody I know that has the answers. And I listen to Trog, and I agree with him precisely in many, many ways in that I'm not sure people will wake up, because I think most polls show that about 54% of Americans don't know and don't care what's going on. About 75% feel no pain. Another 25% get the pain. So if there's nobody feeling pain, there's no way our country will not escape some kind of a catastrophe. It would have to be either a revolutionary war internally or something outside that will take our country and move it off this axis that is teeter-tottering, and something is keeping us from just falling off the edge of the world. And I don't think we're millenniums or miles or weeks or years from it. I think it could happen in 2015. I think it could happen any day. I think what's going on in North Africa, what's going on in the Middle East, and people don't know how to connect the dots. Most people don't even realize that North Africa and the Middle East are almost the same region. And when shots are fired in Tunisia or in Libya, they affect the other countries. And these countries are third world countries any way you look at it, and they see an opportunity by way of war to capture some of this oil that's going to be shipped and brought money in. So when I see this occurring, and I've been studying this now for 2.5 years, I've been studying for 50 years, but I don't want to say how long, but for the last 2.5, 3 years, I've been studying this thing about inflation, and all I hear about is inflation is low. And I studied for the last, well, since 2009, the grocery prices on 57 items and oil prices and just a few other things. And our inflation has been averaged about 8.9% per year. Now, that's also a number, and people say, well, it's not possible. Well, it is possible. It's just that we hide this thing because if you have a dollar, it's devalued. It doesn't look like we're having inflation. It's hidden inflation, just like unemployment. Unemployment, like Trog said, I did an analysis in North Carolina because it showed the number of people working compared to people unemployed. They were talking about we had a 6.9% unemployment ratio. And actually what we have is a 15.9%. When I take the people who are no longer employed at all, or the workforce has been reduced, compared to for the last 10 years, we are somewhere between 14.9% and 17.9% unemployment in North Carolina. Nationwide, we're close to 23%. This country is already bankrupt financially, and it's bankrupt morally, and it's bankrupt almost any other way. So if nobody cares, then how do you get anybody to move? If there's no moral compass, where do we go from here? And I don't see where we go except something interrupts us.
Yeah. I'm not laughing at you, man. I'm just laughing at the insanity of it.
Well, the whole thing's insanity because each morning, each night at 2 o'clock in the morning sometimes, I go outside my door and look around. I go, guess what? There's no war outside. There's no poverty outside my door. There's nobody outside that and having pain. I live in a gated community. Everybody here is happy and they're protected. And you can't even get in our community without the right keys.
Right.
And so it must be this way. The rest of the world must be just like I am. I can go outside my door and jump in the swimming pool or jacuzzi. So the rest of the world must be the same way. And it's not. I know it's not so because, first of all, I know people here live here who have a problem because we keep raising our homeowners' dues where I live. And they're having problems because they're on fixed income. They just look like they have no problems, but they have no way to share their pain. The only way you have to share pain is if they have people like you guys on the radio or on television. And they're not there. Now, I know you guys don't like Fox, but the problem about Fox is that's all we got. On television, there's nothing else. And on Fox is only going to take about an hour of that. At least it's better than watching network news.
Yeah.
But a network news is a joke. So I look outside my community and I wonder, is there anybody out here that feels like I do? And the only time I know there is listen to you two guys. Otherwise, I assume everybody, there is no war, there's no famine, there's no discouragement, there's nothing. Everybody's got money, they're educated, these student loans, you don't have to pay them all, nothing. Although my son pays every month on his student loan.
Well, there's like a 25% default. Yeah, there's like 25% default.
But you guys may be the only ones that know there's a problem. There may not be a problem. You're the only two that think there's a problem. Well, maybe three of us now, because I'm the third one.
Well, we must be crazy. No, I don't think we're the only two. There's others out there that are addressing it, but it's information you have to go find. It's not getting piped to you like you mentioned on the Fox News. They're not piping this in. And sometimes they get people who... You know, and look, we like your feedback. I mean, the only way we know what to talk about really is what interests me and Chris. But if you have something you want interested, you got to reach out to us on Facebook or Twitter and let us know what you want to hear. But sometimes we get accused of just being like doom and gloom. And we're not. We're Rex and Trog, not doom and gloom. But I guess if we're going to be doom and gloom, I'll let him be gloom, I'll be doom, or if you want to be doom, that's fine.
Well,
we're realists. The situation stinks. That's the issue. The situation stinks, and that's what it is. But it doesn't look that bad. Like you said, Terry, you go outside of your house, and there's food on the shelves, and there's no bombs dropping, and, you know, things look hunky-dory, and it looks just like America, and everything's fine. And it's about to come
undone.
Like I said, we've been at the top of the food chain. Well, yeah, not in Chicago. Well, there are pockets, but generally speaking, we're at the top of the food chain, so we've been benefiting from all this plunder, so people think this is going to continue. It's the gravy train that lasts forever. Well, rationally, that's not possible. And that's why people have to be that future pain that's inevitably coming needs to be brought into the present, because otherwise you're not going to know it's there until after you've begun to experience it, and then it'll be so much pain that you won't even be thinking about juries and sheriffs and militias and Bill of Rights and Constitution. Everybody will just turn to whoever says, I will restore order. And that's exactly how Stalin and Hitler and Pol Pot
Mussolini.
And every tyrant down through the ages has come to power. Anyway, we're running out of time,
Obama,
so we're going to go to final
power.
Thoughts,
Obama,
but I want to throw it to
Obama
Terry. Yeah, exactly. Hopes and chains. Anyway, so I'm going to throw it to Terry for, you know, whatever your final thoughts are. Then we'll go to Chris, and then I'll close up.
My final thoughts is that I'm not doom and gloom, but I know this, that I own my own company and have for many, 20-some years, and my business is 75% less than it was 6 years ago. Not because of anything I've done, but I work twice as hard. And I don't see it improving because I hear you guys, and you're the only salvation I've got is I hear you guys. But the problem is I agree with you. Damn it, I agree with you. That doesn't help. The most people I talk to, it's not they disagree with me. They don't have an opinion at all. Everybody I talk to has no opinion. They're so apathetic, they don't know and don't care. I say, are you stupid or apathetic? They say, I don't know and I don't care. And that's the problem. I'd rather somebody argue with you. Nobody argues. Goes, you know, my next-door neighbor is supposedly a liberal, except he's not. He don't care about anything because he's got all the money he needs and has no problem, and he's retired and he don't care. So he quit being a liberal because it's not important to him anymore. So I can't even argue with him anymore. I said, nobody will disagree. I live in a closed circuit bunch of conservatives, and they're all wasps. But everybody has the same thought pattern I do, except they don't have any problems anymore. So my closing thought is this. We've lost our moral compass, and I think this. If we don't find a way back to a moral compass, economics and political is not going to matter. None of it's going to matter. We don't start caring about our fellow men and we love each other, and we find a way to show that. If it's not in a church, it's not on television, I go to church, and the pews are empty. And the reason they're empty is because there's no message. We don't deliver a message. If we don't do that, not about me, and my right now is that I'm anchored in Christ. That's my new motto. And if we don't do that, and we don't find a way to share what Jesus shared, then we don't have a prayer. That is the only prayer, it's the only hope. And it's a hard one. It's the only one I can anchor onto now. So that's mine, is I pray that you guys don't quit. But let's anchor in Christ from this time forward, okay?
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Terry.
Wow.
Thank you for calling in.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. You know,
don't get Chris and I started on Christians, because – you know, as far as I'm concerned, you can blame Christians for all the problems we have because they should know better. But anyway, I'll let you do your closing thoughts.
Yeah, hiding in their churches, doing their bake sales. You know, I am of an age, and I've said this before, so I'll make it short, but I grew up with my grandparents who were, you know, adults in the Depression, adults to World War One, and then my parents who were children in the Depression. So my mom, you know, grew up in an era where they did not have an indoor toilet until she got almost graduated from high school. So having grown up in that world, I saw the world that was. I saw people who family was everything, you know, religious people, you know, they may not have been perfect, but, you know, they had their core values and they worked hard. And they expected nothing from anybody, and they helped each other. And, you know, so I grew up with that influence in my life. So it definitely gave me a historical perspective that people, you know, young people today have no clue of. You know, they think it's a struggle when they don't have enough money for Starbucks. And it's sad. because we become fat, lazy, apathetic. We've turned from God, and we have elected people who promise us shit if we'll give them their vote. And that is exactly what our founding fathers warned us about. And people talk about, well, that was a different era, and, you know, they were founding fathers wouldn't know the world would be like it is today. People have never changed. I mean, the crap that we talk about and the things that I see in life, I mean, I go to the Old Testament and go, yeah, people are the same. So, you know, there's nothing new under the sun. Forget the technology, forget, you know, cars and boats and planes and automobiles and lasers, and just look at society and what holds society together and what collapses a society. And more importantly, what happens when the shit hits the fan? When we went through, you know, when Pearl Harbor was hit, when 9/11 was hit, and it's amazing to me because I've studied this, but how this country responded after 9/11 and the country that I live in today and what Terry was talking about, apathetic, I don't care, I don't give a damn, you know, I'm doing okay, I got mine, just leave me alone, don't, you know, don't upset my limited peace and security that I have hiding from the world. That is a totally different American than the America right after 9/11. And that's only been how long? Not very long, a little over a decade. And that's how fast this country is broken down internally. Now you add the corruption, and you add the corrupt politics. You add the guy we got in power now and the group behind him. You add our foreign policy on top of that, what's going on around the world, and you got a mess. And the core value that has made this country, I mean, come on, we survived the Civil War. That was terrible, you know, or the war against the South, sorry. East Southern.
Yeah, there you go. There was no Civil War.
Well, I'm all Southern roots, too. But I grew up in the Northwest, so I don't have the passion of it like you do. But the things this country's gone through, even the Great Depression, everything else, people pulled together, and that spirit of America, that thing that we talk about, that thing that people rally behind, you know, that red, white, and blue American pie, blah, 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 baseball American pie, that is broken. And if you have bad leadership, corrupt leadership, leadership that hates this country, and then you have a screwed up society, you know, the amount of kids on drugs, you know, the 88, you know, the whatever that crap is they give kids.
Ritalin.
You know, the drugs, Ritalin and all this crap. You know, I heard on a newspaper a woman got arrested because she did a home birth. I mean, the country is messed up. And it's coming at us from every direction. And we're attacked from above and we're attacked from below. And the pressure is on. All we have to do is have a major crisis and something boil over, and you, in a heartbeat, you can have Nazi Germany, in a heartbeat. And we, you and I did the show on the Weimar Republic, you know, which was the precursor and the crash, you know, and the hyperinflation to, you know, the rise of Hitler. And it was a very important lesson. But it's the same thing, you know, if you look at any totalitarian situation. There are people in our country today that have the belief that the communist experiment in Soviet Russia was still a good idea. It just needed to be tweaked, and it needs to be done here. And they're in our government, and they're in our educational system, they're in our colleges, and they're openly proud communists. And they control a lot of the thought in terms of centralized government and total control. And that's the society that we're in today. Question is, will Americans rise up? Will they find that spirit again? Will they quit? You know, you said something very important, you know, doom and gloom, because I think about this a lot. You know, like, how in the hell can I make this message more positive? How can I educate people? You know, and I'm like going, well, the only positive message I can give you is there is a God, and he died for your sins. That's the only positive message I can give you right now. But, you know, outside of that, the rest of it's shit right now. And so you can either embrace that and go, okay, we're in a tough time, like we were when Pearl Harbor was hit, 9/11 happened. And I need to make sure that I'm on my game, that I'm clear, I'm cognizant, that I'm up and ready for the fight, and that I'm here to save my country. Because like the refugees that came here and that one guy in specific that came from Cuba that said, this country's in trouble. He goes, when I left Cuba, I had a place to go. We got nowhere else to go. And that's an important message. And so you have to fight. And that means you have to get up and say, I'm not going to be ignorant. I'm not going to hide in my shell. I'm not going to hide in my church. I'm not going to hide from the truth. I'm not going to listen to Fox and CNN tell me who the enemy is so I know who to hate, because that's a bullshit propaganda Hegelian dialect game, you know. You know, trying to turn Russia into the enemy and China into the enemy and ISA and ISIS and then into the enemy and Assad. And it's like none of these people affect what is happening to you in your home and your finances. Those are distractions. Although they're important geopolitically because they impact our country and where our country is going and what's going to happen and not happen in the next 1 or 2 years. But as far as the rest of it, when you sit there in front of the TV and that plane goes down and then you get all caught up in that, I'm like going, do you even know the history of Ukraine? Do you even know what happened? Do you know what an NGO is? Do you know that John McCain was over there hanging with the Nazis? Do you know that Newland was over there giving out cookies and redesigning the new government after the revolution that they planned went through? Do you even know that shit? So if you don't know that stuff, what in the hell are you making an opinion about it now for? In other words, do the research. You know, that's something that I followed very closely from the beginning, so I have very strong opinions on everything that's gone on in the Ukraine. And so it's not emotional for me. Hell, you know, 100,000 people got killed in Syria. If that ain't an emotional cry for you, what are you worried about 300 people on a plane for? I mean, not to minimize it, but do you understand what I'm saying here? How many Iraqis died in our invasion? Innocent people that had nothing to do with the government or the bad guys. I mean, you know, if you want to get upset at something, get upset at that. Why are you getting upset over something that you have no control over and probably know nothing about? Or who the players are, what the game, political game is, or what the U.S.'s part is. And so, you know, and in other words, I'm trying to help people get a perspective here. What are you looking at? What are you thinking about? And why aren't you thinking about the things that matter? You know, do you understand economics? Because if you don't, you're going to keep electing politicians that will screw you and this country for their own gain. And there are literally people, you know, people like to get off into the New World Order and all that crap. There are people who believe that we need to have a world government, that we need to be a merged world, and the United States needs to be a state of that system. Then there's other people, the neocons, who believe that we need a world government, but it needs to be all us, and we need to manage and control and you know, scare the shit out of and bomb the shit out of anybody that gets out of hand, or sanction them and destroy their economy and whatever. So you've got a lot of different fractions of people who are in this power struggle game. But the problem is, you've given them the power. They were never supposed to have this much power. The president was never supposed to be able to declare war at a whim. It was supposed to be up to Congress. You were never supposed to have a centralized private bank control our currency, i.e. the Fed. Look at the damn Constitution. Read Ron Paul's books. I mean, he covered this stuff for years. And they called him a kook. You know, study history. You know, the globalist bankers, you know, tried to enact two different central banks before the Fed, and both of them got pushed back by the people. One second one by Andrew Jackson, you know, who said, screw this. And hell, they tried to assassinate him a couple times. Bankers, everything goes back to, if I can control the money, I can control everything. And I can fund both sides of the war and make money off of death and destruction. Want to know who the bad guys are? That's them. And if you want your country back, you have to educate yourself on economics, foreign policy, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and start learning to ask politicians where they stand on these things, because if you don't, you will get the government you deserve. That's my close.
Yep. Both you and Terry hit the nail on the head. By the way, I'm doom, he's gloom. But ton of bricks. You are getting hit with a ton of bricks. It's not going to happen all at once. Some of you won't feel it, but it's coming. Some of you are already feeling it. It's coming. Wake up, pay attention, and inform yourself. Learn how to think. Chris mentioned the Buy America episode that we did, like that, and a related one, which we did sometime last year, Back in the USSR. All of those shows are available, including this one, on our Blog Talk Radio page. Just go to blogtalkradio.com/LibertyStunder. You can play any of them anytime, and even though they are somewhat timely and topical, they are useful pretty much any time because the stuff that we're talking about it is happening. So it's not like it happened. It's happening. And we appreciate you getting the word out there because if you don't tell people the show exists, they don't know it exists. And if you don't get people to start thinking differently, they don't have to think like me and Chris. They don't have to sound like me and Chris. They don't have to agree with everything we say. Our point here is to get people to start thinking and stop buying the lies. And the lies come from all sorts of places. They come from the, quote, alternate media, from the conspiracy fringe. They come from the establishment media, the MSLSD and the Fox News. So you really have to have something by which to measure it. And that's what we're trying to give you here. And the most important thing to understand, and all those people that Chris just talked about that have infiltrated our academy, our government, our media, our entertainment, our advertising, everything, they are never going to be convinced that they're wrong, and they're going to do everything that they can to destroy you. In the meantime, they sow division amongst us. Now, committed leftists, people who actually still think Obama is a hopey-changey president, they're never going to be reached. It doesn't matter. They get to enjoy the fruits of liberty that we provide them. Don't worry about them. You need to focus on the people who actually believe this stuff, the people who understand America. And for the most part, for the most part, you know, we used to be united under a focal enemy, Soviet communism. That's what united the conservative and liberty side of the spectrum. That's gone. Now we're seeing the emergence of a post-World War II, post-Bretton Woods, post-Cold War, post-neocon American hegemony system coming up to compete. That's what BRICS is about. We need to unite on our side. We don't have to agree on everything. We don't have to agree on every issue. We don't have to agree on every candidate. But we have to agree on those broad principles. And the two dominant voting blocks that are required to create a coup and a takeover of the right wing of the national duopoly. There's nothing wrong with third parties. There's nothing wrong with alternate parties. We talked about competition. Competition is great. But focusing on your third party is really almost a fool's errand. You have to focus on the precincts. You have to focus on the ballot access. You have to focus on the voting rules before you can have that alternate party opening. That's what you have to focus on. In the meantime, and that doesn't mean don't do those things, but in the meantime, we have a national neocon war party duopoly that has a left wing and a right wing. On the right wing, there's a toehold. It's a small toehold of liberty-minded constitutionalists, and that's who you have to help. That's who you have to increase their ranks. Not rip them apart, but help them. Help Justin Amash in Michigan, August 5th. Help Joe Miller. Primaries have been a disaster so far. I know that recently there was some upset in a senatorial race where the, quote, outsider won, but nevertheless, the issue is that we have not had as much of a showing as we need, but you got to maximize the opportunities that are left. Justin Amash is one of those gems of an honest constitutionalist who's young, who can really help, but not if you let them take him out. But the two dominant factors, the two dominant swaths of voting blocks that can take over the right are Christian conservatives and libertarianish conservatives. And for the most part, y'all are at each other's throats, and it disgusts me. It really disgusts me because you're costing each other the victory that we all deserve by fighting with each other. And they're going to give you 2016 candidates that split you right down that middle.
They're going to give you a Rand Paul, even though they're going to try to take him out, and they're going to give you a Huckabee or, and or a Santorum to split you so that they can run a Bush or a Christie up the middle. That's what they did before. That's what they're going to do again. If you don't start working together, it's over. And you can work together, all right? Now, I happen to be a orthodox, hardcore, annoying Catholic, pre-Vatican II type, just like Dr. Thomas Woods, Judge Napolitano, Ricky Santorum, and Paul Ryan. If someone can be that hardcore Christian and still be libertarianish, why can't the rest of you cafeteria Christians do the same? Why can't you, when I say cafeteria, I'm not being insulting. I'm talking about the various flavors of whatever kind of Christianity you buy into. Why can't you libertarians get off your anti-religion meme? If you're truly libertarian in the liberty principles, not in the hedonistic libertine aspect, then you want the freedom to believe or not believe. You should be a natural ally with the Christians who believe that it is the morality of Christianity that makes liberty possible. And historically, that's true, because the liberty that we have in this country came to us through Greco-Roman law and philosophy and Judeo-Christian morality. That's what built Christendom, and that's where we inherited our liberty from. That's a historical fact. So there's no need to have this division between the two. Now, you don't get to impose your religion on anybody else. You don't get to impose your irreligion on anybody else. It's about liberty. That's a personal conviction. You have to have a personal relationship with God. But we have to have a common objective moral standard. Whether you come to it through reason or you come to it through faith matters little to me, as long as we agree on what it is, and we should. The rights to life, liberty, property, the pursuit of happiness. That's what matters. You should be natural allies, but you're at each other's throats. And I can't believe how many people who identify as Christians are running around like neocon warmongers who want to see people dead. That's disgusting. Same with this border issue. Wanting to seal the border and wanting to not invite foreign unskilled labor into our country when one out of four Americans doesn't have a job and we have starving kids here is not inhumane. Now, treating the kids who are being used in this debacle poorly or not taking care of them is. Those are two different things. Learn how to think through a problem. And we don't have to agree on everything, but we have to agree on those broad things. You have to do it, because if we don't do the heavy lifting, and look, you're going to need 35-40% agreement. There's always that 20-30% that just votes party line no matter what on any issue. Don't worry about them. They're a foregone conclusion. But that other part. And it only takes an increase of 5, 10, 15%. So just start waking people up. Let them not be so self-absorbed and take things for granted, because what they always think can't happen here is happening here, and it will only get worse. That's not being doom and gloom. That's the truth of the matter. Now, some of you non-Christians out there are very happy to quote the Bhagavad Gita, the Kung Fu Tse, Buddha, whatever. Well, I'm not going to quote those things, but I am going to quote from today's mass readings because they matter to all of us. So if you believe, then you know this is the word of the God. And if you don't believe, then you know that it's just an ancient text that may have some wisdom you can glean, so pay attention. First one's from Romans 8. We know that in everything God works for good with those who love him, who are called according to his purpose. Now, it's just rational to believe in a creator. Our country is founded on a document that seceded from the British Crown, recognizing that there is a creator. Now, who he is, your relationship with him, that's a separate issue. That's not going to have anything to do with our culture or politics. That's something you got to work out yourself. But just understand something. Everything can be made good if you're working for the purpose of the one who made you, because he doesn't want anything for you except good. Now, bad things will happen, and sometimes bad things can be very helpful. We're experiencing a lot of bad things right now. Use those things to your advantage to wake up, make an about-face, doing things differently and correctly instead of nitpicking age-old arguments on one side of the equation that pits us against the other side of the equation so that
the status quo wins. Wake up. The other thing that's pretty important is from Matthew chapter 13. The kingdom of heaven is like a merchant in search of fine pearls, who on finding one pearl of great value, went and sold all that he had and bought it. Now, that pearl of greatest value is the kingdom of heaven. But since this show is not about saving your soul, but about saving this country, then take it a level down. That pearl of great value is the American Republic. Its spirit, its creed, and we did a show, American Credo, recently, its creed is the Declaration of Independence, and its form is the U.S. Constitution. And if you don't have that Declaration of Independence in your heart, and you don't understand the form of that U.S. Constitution, you will fall for the crap that Putin's evil, that we have to let Israel dictate our foreign policy, that we have to do Saudi Arabia's bidding, and that everything they tell you on TV is the truth. That's the lie. That's a diabolical inversion that is turning freedom and liberty and right and good and justice into tyranny and murder and subjection. And while you may be the right hand of the devil now, you will be in his path soon. It's better to stand against him today. And the scripture goes on and it says, so it will be at the close of the age. The angels will come out and separate the evil from the righteous and throw them into the furnace of fire. Their men will weep and gnash their teeth. The rising of BRICS, whether it's good or bad for them or whatever, it doesn't matter to me. But I can tell you that it is that kick in the pants to what has been happening here on our side, in our country. This is the kick in the pants that could topple the Federal Reserve IMF control scheme. But only if people know what it is and don't fall for the lie that substituting our IMF Fed scheme for their BRICS scheme is somehow better. What we need to do is go to the right thing. And the right thing is sound money, free markets, private property, the rule of law, and diffusion of power. Because all men are prone to corruption. You want to be free? Be responsible for it. You want rights? Accept the obligations. When you take your liberty for granted and all you want is the right to do without any of the obligations, this is what you get. Oligarchs who will control your money, oligarchs who will control your activity, oligarchs who will control your economy, oligarchs who will control your foreign policy and will run around the world killing other people and stealing their stuff for their own benefit, not for yours. But they'll do it in your name, and you'll be tarnished for it, and you will pay for it when your country is on fire. So as terrible as it looks right now, it is the moment of darkness in which you can see the contrast with the light. It is always darkest before dawn. And if you want to see the sun rise on America again, then this night, while it's dark, while it's scary, get off your ass, reach out to people, help them understand, and get them to work to restore liberty. And it involves a lot more than voting. This is Rex and Trog signing off.
And the thunder of liberty rumbles on.
Gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses.
Yeah!
I think it's a bad idea to discuss contingency plans for war. While I'm in favor of the Senate retaining our prerogative to declare war, I believe that the details of the execution of war are in the purview of the executive. In other words, we do have the power to begin or to not begin a war. That is the power the Constitution gave us. But I don't think the Constitution intended to have 535 generals. I don't think it intended to have us explicitly talking about every contingency plan for every possible war in every corner of the globe. I don't think it's best to openly discuss these plans for defending against attack, and especially not for involving ourselves in a civil war. Our nation and our soldiers are weary of war. Our nation yearns for leaders who will strive to keep us out of war. Our nation yearns for leaders who are reluctant to begin a new war or get involved in a new war.
America's not just experiencing growing pains. America's in a full-blown crisis. I think a spiritual crisis. The problem, as Oz Guinness puts it, is not wolves at the door, but termites in the floor. Lincoln saw this, and others have seen this, and the way I see it is our foundation is cracking. It's not that we've just chosen the wrong politicians. It's more fundamental than that, and I think it requires a deeper introspection. Lincoln saw America as a nation of free men, that America must live through all time because of the great things we stand for, or die by suicide. And Lincoln worried that that might happen to us because we lived in that tumultuous time when the country was being torn apart. I think we've arrived at another crossroads. We've arrived at a day of reckoning in our country. And the question is, will we falter? Or will we thrive and recover our mojo, as I like to put it? What America needs is not just another politician or more promises. What America needs is a revival.
Amen.
What we need to discover is that law, the law, follows virtue. When virtue is restored, then will the law reflect goodness. It's not the other way around. The law will not save you. A war, though, exists. I think this exists between those who seek to divide us and those who wish to guide us. A war is being waged between those who understand and embrace America's exceptional founding and those who simply want to divide. As Thomas Paine put it, these are the times that try men's souls.
It saddens me to see that in these countries there are supposedly our allies, that they continue to persecute Christians. It angers me to see my tax dollars supporting regimes that put Christians to death for blasphemy against Islam. Countries that put to death Muslims who convert to Christianity, and countries who imprison anyone who marries outside their religion. I say no more money to countries.
Over a quarter of a million Iraqi Christians fled Iraq.
Saddam Hussein was a brutal dictator, make no mistake about it, but his government was secular and therefore relatively safe place for Christians. Christians, however, now fear the new government, the new Shiite government, worse than the Hussein government. So the government we put in place has caused Christians by the hundreds of thousands to flee Iraq to go into Syria. So now we have 2 million Christians in Syria. And what's going on? We're talking about arming Islamic rebels that are going to be shooting at Christians. It makes no sense to me. Syrians have lived as Christians since the time of Christ. I have a friend of mine who has an Arabic name. He was in my wedding, but he's a Christian. And I asked him when I was in medical school, how long have you been a Christian? He said, well, a heck of a lot longer than you have. He said, we've been Christians since the time of Christ. There have been Christians in the Middle East for a long time. But what we have to figure out is what we're going to do. The Senate's attempting now to arm forces in Syria, many of whom are al-Qaeda or their affiliates. They say they're going to vet this, but I don't think it's so easy. They do this out of a misguided attempt to stop the violence in Syria. But I think instead their actions will bring more violence and more persecution of Christians who have long been protected in Syria. Before the Arab Spring, Christianity flourished in small outposts like the Coptic Christians in Egypt. I'd hoped that the Arab Spring would bring freedom to long-oppressed people throughout the Middle East, but I fear that the Arab Spring is becoming an Arab winter. Today, Christians in Iraq, Libya, Egypt, and Syria are on the run, persecuted or under fire, and yet we continue to send aid to the people who are chasing them. While they burn the American flag and the mobs chant death to America, more of your money is sent to these haters of Christianity. Even if all of the atrocities to Christians were not occurring in these countries, we simply don't have the money to engage in this foolishness. We must first borrow the money from China to send it to Pakistan. While American soldiers spent a decade fighting to liberate Iraq, and while American taxpayers have sent nearly $470 million in aid, Karl Mueller, president of Open Doors, describes what is going on there as religicide. Before the toppling of Hussein, Mosul, a city in Iraq, was home to 75,000 Christians, but now the numbers dropped to 25,000. Christian homes are set on fire, bombs are placed in their cars, Christian families are receiving threatening letters to leave Iraq or be kidnapped or killed.
It's clear that American taxpayer dollars are being used to enable a war on Christianity in the Middle East, and I believe it must end. Pope John Paul II spoke about a culture of death. He talked about a war of the powerful against the weak. As Christians, we know we must always stand with the most defenseless. I believe that no civilization can long endure that does not respect life from the not yet born to the life's very last breath.
Overwhelming trillion-dollar budget and a national debt that could exceed 100% of the GDP in September, it is barely a drop in the bucket. One reason that H.R. 1 does not cut spending enough is that too many fiscal conservatives continue to embrace the fallacy that we can balance the budget without reducing spending on militarism. Until Congress realizes the folly of spending trillions and pretending to impose democracy on the world, we will never be able to seriously reduce spending. Congress must not only reject the warfare state, it must also reject the welfare state. H.R. 1 is more aggressive in ending domestic spending than foreign spending and does zero out some objectionable federal programs such as AmeriCorps. However, H.R. 1 leaves most of the current functions of the federal government undisturbed. This bill thus continues the delusion that we can have a fiscally responsible and efficient welfare state. The failure to even attempt to address the serious threat the welfare-warfare state poses to American liberty and prosperity is the main reason why supporters of limited government and individual liberty ultimately should find H.R. 1 unsatisfactory. Only a rejection of the view that Congress can run the economy, run our lives, and run the world will allow us to make the spending reductions necessary to avert a serious financial crisis. This does not mean we should not prioritize and discuss how to gradually transition away from the welfare state in a manner that does not harm those currently relying on these programs. However, we must go beyond balancing the budget to transitioning back to a free society. And that means eventually placing responsibility for social welfare back in the hands of individuals and private institutions. Despite the overheated rhetoric heard during the debate, H.R. 1 is a diversion from the difficult task of restoring constitutional government and a free economy and society. It is time for Congress to get serious about cutting spending, not merely tinkering around the edges of the proposed budget and kicking the can down the road for future generations. If we fail to act decisively now, there will soon come a time when both our money and our capacity to borrow will run out. When that happens, our ability to negotiate and play political games with spending priorities will be over. To avoid real chaos, the time to start dealing with our bloated government budget is right now.
According to Malden and Tepper's book, Code Red, at $4 trillion, with roughly $55 billion in equity, the Fed is leveraged at about 77 to 1. Think about that. That is an insane amount of leverage for any bank. The Fed is more leveraged than the balance sheets of Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns, Freddie or Fannie before those institutions essentially failed. Jim Rickards, author of Currency Wars, notes, the Fed is insolvent on a mark-to-market basis. The Fed has wiped out its capital on a mark-to-market basis. Of course, the Fed carries these notes on its balance sheet at cost and does not mark them down to market. But if they did, they would be broke. The insolvency of the Fed will become a major issue in the years ahead and may necessitate the financial bailout of the Fed by the taxpayers. So the once proud dollar that was once backed by gold, then backed by the full faith and credit of the world's greatest country, is now backed by used car loans and underwater mortgages. But those who trust in paper say, hey, look, For 50 years now, we've had no convertibility, and amazing improvements in productivity and wealth have occurred. Perhaps. But one might also argue that we are living on the borrowed plumage of the past, that our current acceptance of a paper currency rests on the glory of our industrial and monetary past. No one can tell for sure what the future holds, but I, for one, am concerned that the panic of 2008 may not have been an anomaly, but a harbinger of something far worse. I am concerned that we have papered over the problems
in a sea of new currency, that quantitative easing has created an illusion of safety and security, but beneath the surface lurks a bigger and more malevolent future. Don't take my word for it. Listen to some of the economists who predicted the financial crisis in 2008. Economist Jim Grant recently said, "From the United States to Europe and Asia, the world's central banks are flooding markets with liquidity and pushing deeper into unknown monetary policy territory, and I feel this journey will not end well." Or Nassim Taleb, author of The Black Swan, he writes, "Someone made a mistake lending, and someone made a mistake borrowing. And it is a mistake to transform private problems into public debt. And we are facing an environment with a huge amount of debt. The next mistake is going to be to overprint, which is going to be the way out for them, which is why I fear hyperinflation." Or Yale University housing expert and recent Nobel Prize winner Robert Shiller, "This financial crisis that we've been going through in the last 5 years has been one that seems to reveal the failure to understand price movement." Not shying away from his concerns that the Fed is simply inflating the housing bubble in America's largest cities, he argues, "Housing prices are up 12% in the last year. This is a very rapid rise in prices, and I believe it is accelerated some by Fed policies. The housing market, it has its own momentum right now as people see it coming back. We're sort of in the beginnings of another housing bubble." Since we abandoned the sequester budget caps, any pretense of fiscal discipline is gone. Politicians can attempt to obfuscate the truth with promises of spending restraint in the outlying years, but everybody knows that the promise to cut in the out years is a pipe dream, and that all that really counts is the first 2 years of the Ryan Murray plan that will add over $60 billion in new spending. What really causes China concern is not the new spending that we're incurring, but that the total new debt added over the 10 years in the Ryan Murray plan will be $7 trillion in new debt. China's response to our fiscal lack of discipline was to downgrade our debt. Our $17 trillion debt is manageable only when the Fed is buying it and only with low interest rates. China's Daegang Global Credit Rating said in their statement on the downgrade, "The deal means only an escape from a debt default for the time being, but hasn't changed the fact that the growth of government borrowing has largely outpaced overall economic growth and fiscal revenues." These are facts, and both sides, Republicans and Democrats, are ignoring the facts. China, when they downgraded us, said it, and you cannot escape this fact. The growth of government borrowing has largely outpaced overall economic growth and fiscal revenues. It was sad when the Chinese government can see major economic problems for us that Washington continues to ignore. At current interest rates, we pay about $237 billion in interest payments. If interest rates rise by 1%, interest spending will increase by $1.2 trillion. If interest rates return to the norms of the 1980s, the taxpayer will be on the hook for an additional $6.17 trillion. If interest rates go to 10%, Katie, bar the door. The panic will be upon us. Now, most conservatives would be aghast if we talked about price controls. Conservatives realize, as most economists now do, that price controls lead to a glut if the price is too high and to bare shelves if the price is too low. The Soviet Union was brought low for that very reason. No one, no matter how wise, can determine the correct price of bread without a marketplace. Anytime a government tries to set prices, the consequences is disastrous. But many leaders who are quite aware of the destructive nature of price controls nevertheless advocate for allowing the Fed to set the price of money, for that is what interest rates are, simply the price of money. Like any other price, though, if the setting of interest rates, if you set them lower than the market rate of interest, it encourages more use of the money and more economic activity. But if the rates are kept below the market rate, you interrupt the feedback loop that informs producers that they are overproducing. The bubble expands until overproduction has reached such a point that the correction is a catastrophe. That's what happened with the housing bubble. We kept interest rates too low for too long, and the bubble grew and grew and grew, and we're still suffering from that. And what are we doing now? Exactly the same thing. Jim Rickards explains this phenomenon.
Market participants and policymakers rely on market prices to make decisions about economic policy. What happens when the price signals upon which policymakers rely are themselves distorted by prior policy manipulation? First, you distort the price signal, by market manipulation, but then you rely on that price to guide your policy going forward. This is the blind leading the blind, he says. Politicians have been complacent in letting the Fed manipulate interest rates for many reasons. Many politicians are reticent to get involved in monetary policy. They're worried of being blamed if the economy sours with monetary reforms. Many politicians believe that the economy is better off with the Fed than with the panics that occurred before the Fed. But perhaps the variations in the economy of late indicate just as much instability with the Fed as before the Fed. There's some truth to the fact that big debt and deficit financing in all likelihood require a central bank to pay the debt with inflated dollars. And there is some truth to this. John Malden and Jonathan Tepper's new book, Code Red, highlights this very point. In 2011, the Federal Reserve financed about three-quarters of the U.S. debt deficit. In 2012, it financed over half of it, and in 2013, the Fed will finance most of the deficit. We are on course to finance the entire U.S. debt in 2014. Now, for anyone imagining a day without a Fed, they would have to propose a government that would balance its budgets annually. Without fiscal restraint, you can't ever have monetary restraint. The opposite is where we are now. With fiscal irresponsibility, borrowing over $1 million a minute, you need a compliant monetary policy, and that's exactly what we have. But there are consequences to massive debts and corresponding massive purchases of debt by the Fed. The consequences can be gradual or abrupt. The gradual bankrupting of America is proceeding apace. We pay for it with new money created by the Fed. The result is a gradual loss of the purchasing power. Over the past 100 years, the dollar has lost 96% of its value.